Starring Uncharted.
Cute, Bob. Real cute.
Listen to me. When you go down the stairs, out the front door, I want you to go down the street to Mackenzie's house. I want you to tell them to call the police. And tell them to stay home.
What's going on out here?
Call the police. Tell the sheriff I shot him. Tell him he's still on the loose.
Is this some kind of joke? You've been trick-or-treated to death tonight.
You don't know what death is.
Stop. Left anterior chest possibly penetrating.
Oh, slice
yes,
come on,
right.
Michael
Myers.
Come on.
I swear, yesterday when she was coming to work.
What did she see?
You know the shopping bag out by the mall? She stopped at a light and saw him walking in that field behind the Lost River Drive-In. Julie said he was so creepy.
Julie's full of shit. We didn't escape until last night.
It isn't fair. They should have allowed you to examine everything. That girl, that strong girl, that's Michael Myers' sister.
Barbara Crampton from Chopping Mall, and you're listening to The Hysteria Continues.
Indeed you are. Welcome back to The Hysteria Continues, episode number 46. And this time we have something quite special. We've got Spooktastic double bill of Halloween 1 and 2, the originals, from 1978 and 1981. Also got complete with a Halloween quiz from Eric, which I'm sure we're all going to do really badly on, but we shall see. So welcome, without further ado, to my fellow trick-or-treaters from overseas. How are you doing, Eric?
Very good, thank you.
Yeah.
Excellent, yes.
Yes, what are your Halloween plans?
Oh, Horrorthon at the IFI in Dublin City Centre, which I'm rushing off to after we record here.
Okay, what's on, what are you looking forward to seeing?
First up is the surprise film, which in the past has been surprised for the wrong reasons, but we're promised it's something good this year. Then there's a film called Excision, and following that, a big screen outing for Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, which I'm looking forward to.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, excellent, excellent. And how about you, Nathan? I've seen your Halloween costume online. Have you worn that already, or...?
Yeah, I wore it then.
Okay, okay. And what were you? You were a convict?
Yeah, wrapped in barbed wire.
Okay. Was that like a prison reference, was it?
Yeah, it was. Well, I mean, I thought of prison, but really I'm just a random escapee from prison.
Okay. Well, it's quite apt, isn't it, for tonight, for the random escapees from Illinois State, whatever it was. What was it? Smith Grove,
yeah.
That's right. Yes, so excellent. Well, glad to hear that. And how about you, Joseph? What are your Halloween plans?
Probably handing out candy and working on the house. That's okay. Probably all I'm going to be doing this year.
Right. Well, it's one thing I was going to say is it's because of our scheduling conflicts, we are recording a little bit earlier today, and so it's 8 o'clock in the morning, isn't it, where you guys are in the States. So So thank you for Joseph making
it. Yes, that's all my fault. Thank you, boys.
Yeah. Just Arizona, yell if you don't hear anything coming from over here because I might fall asleep.
Well, hopefully not. I'm sure it'll be a very exciting show, so hopefully it will keep us all going. An apologies for last time. As you know, Argento disgraced himself with a litter tray incident, which has now gone down in infamy. And I can hear a cat outside the door meowing, trying to get in, so it could all go horribly wrong yet again, but hopefully it won't. Right, well, all good stuff. Just very quickly, I went to a Day of the Dead Halloween thing last night in the centre of Bristol, with lots of Mexican bands playing stuff, and that was good fun. And unfortunately, I'm going to miss seeing Halloween on the big screen because it's playing in the UK and probably in the States, isn't it, around this time. And I'd love to get to see it, but unfortunately, I'm going to see a show in London on Halloween night, which isn't going to be very Halloween-y, but I think I probably have seen Halloween about 1,500 times already, so maybe I can probably you know, live with missing it for a little while. But before we start with all the Halloween, on time, on a tradition, we'll talk a little bit about what we've been watching recently. So how about you, Eric? What have you been watching since last show?
Okay, well, I was at the Horrorthon started on Thursday night, and I went to it on Friday night and saw a couple of films. First up, there was a short film called Connected, which starred Jennifer Blanc, who is the wife of Michael Biehn. She was here last year as well, and she came over again this year, along with Danielle Harris, who I got to meet on Friday night. She's a very nice lady, she is too. Mm. Anyway, this short film, Connected, is literally 5 minutes, and it's four people from around the world talking into their mobile phones, sending sort of last-minute messages to loved ones before some kind of nuclear Armageddon. It's unspecified. So basically it's 5 minutes of people going, I love you, I miss you, you meant everything to me, blah, 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 into their phone. And then the screen bleaches to white on each one as the nuclear bomb goes off. And it's kind of a nothing film. Hmm. But as soon as the credits rolled, somebody shouted out, better luck next time, Jennifer. And the crowd went silent and was like this big intake of breath. Because I think what he meant was, because I think we all felt the same way, the film was a bit shit.
Yeah.
And we thought this was sort of some guy making a sarcastic jibe. But then she walked out then, and we all thought, oh God, she's really, really upset. But I think she was only planning to stay for the short film and then leave. Mm. But she said afterwards, the way she interpreted his comment was that she died in the film, and he just said, oh, better luck next time, Jennifer.
Right.
Whereas we all assume he meant, because the film was so crap, better luck next time. Mm. Anyway, she was okay about it. But there was a bit of, like, we all felt, oh, my God. Yeah, it could have been much worse. He could have sort of, you know, said something really horrible. Right. But anyway, that was a precursor to Silent Hill Revelation, which was not a huge improvement on the short film, I have to say. The cinema that the Horrorthon takes place in isn't equipped for 3D, so we had to watch it in 2D. Mm. And I didn't mind the first Silent Hill. I thought it had decent visuals and a certain atmosphere that I liked. This one is absolute pants, but it does have occasional moments of that are inspired, particularly one scene where there's this giant spider monster that's comprised of mannequin parts that is really quite creepy, and it spins a web of, I suppose it's kind of like cling film. Which is, you know, it's an interesting idea, and there are some moments in that sequence where I kept thinking to myself, God, that would be brilliant in 3D, because things seem to be poking out of the screen. Mm. But I mean, the film is just tedious beyond belief, and it's really, really video gamey, because the sort of the lead character is the daughter from the first film. She's all grown up now, and Sean Biehn is back in it as her father. He's abducted and taken to Silent Hill, so she has to follow him there. But, you know, to complete her quest, she has to, like, find a key to a room. And then in the room, she has to find the magic amulet. And then she has to travel to the forbidden underground fairground, blah, 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 blah. Mm. And it's just really, really tedious. Mm. It's quite short, though, so it's one to avoid. But if you're into 3D, I reckon the 3D version could look quite good, and there could be some good effects. But otherwise, I'd avoid that one.
Would it have been better with Mr. Biehn rather than Sean Biehn?
It would have been. Sean Biehn is awful in it, and it probably would have been better with Mr. Biehn in it. Like, the acting in the film as a whole was quite atrocious, I thought. Mm. Anyway, later that night, I saw the Justin's production debut, Slice and Dice, the slasher film forever. It was shown in sadly, it was shown on the smaller screen upstairs in the cinema, because it was clashing with a double bill of Zombie Flesh Eaters and Deep Red. Mm. But I really enjoyed the documentary, I have to say. Some great, like, it won't educate those of us who are, what, you know, slasher fans, but it is great fun to watch. And there's a lot of Corey Feldman footage in there, which I like. As you know, I'm a Corey Feldman fan. Hmm. As you know, I know people can slag him off all they want, but he makes some great points about, you know, the rules of slasher films and what his observations. And there's some great clips in there that had the audience, you know, chuckling away, particularly from Pieces. It had the great scene where the guy walks into the elevator with the chainsaw hidden behind his back, and of course Bastards made an appearance and had the place, you know, in fits of laughter. So it was great fun. I really enjoyed it. So congratulations, Justin. And you actually get two credits in the end, I saw.
Oh, do I?
You get associate producer.
Yeah.
And you get film stills or images courtesy of Justin.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. So hopefully.
Yeah. Oh, and Hair by Justin as well.
And what?
Hair by Justin.
Oh, yes, I did do all the hair for Linda Day George.
Actually, we had a little short before that called Out There, which was an Irish 10-minute short about a sort of mini zombie apocalypse, which was actually quite good. So if it shows, I don't know where it will show up, but it was worth seeing.
Mm-hmm. Isn't there a new sort of kind of slasher kind of Irish zombie film or something called? Is it called Grabbers?
It's called Stitches.
Stitches, that's right.
Yeah, and it's got Ross Noble, who's a comedian from the north of England, in it as a clown. I don't really know much else about it, but it opened yesterday. But it's not. It doesn't have the most convenient times. You can either go see it very early in the morning or very late at night.
Okay, well, that's a bit strange, isn't it? Because I think there's another film. Was it called Grabbers or something about some people?
I think Joseph was watching that, were you?
Yes, I've seen that this weekend.
Yeah, I haven't seen Grabbers, I have to say.
Well, is that everything, Eric?
Yeah, that's all I've watched of the horror fan so far. I'm going to see 3 movies tonight and probably 4 or 5 tomorrow, because it's a bank holiday over here.
Okay, great. Well, that sounds good. Well, that kind of neatly seeks us onto what you've been watching, Joseph. So what's Grabbers like?
Well, Grabbers I liked quite a bit. It's kind of a twist on the whole Tremors formula where things grab at you. But this is kind of like, what can I compare it to? Well, it's definitely like Tremors. But the twist here is that to avoid these creatures, this group of Irish people have to get drunk, which is no small task for them, as you know. Well, it's a stereotype, but it's one that's played for laughs. And so a lot of these people are pretty much blitzed through the whole film. Because if the monster kind of sucks your blood, the alcohol will dry it out, I assume.
Right. Okay.
So they end up getting tanked. But the funny part is that, they're trying to avoid these monsters, so they're highly inebriated and they can't move and they can't walk and they're just kind of falling down drunk. So it derides a lot of comedy from that. And it's got some likable characters in it. There's some good suspense, and I was quite surprised that it had some CGI, but it was fairly convincing, and that it did a lot of practical effects, especially the close-ups of the creatures. When the scientist discovers it, and he's like, what is this right here? And it shows all the gross slime and goo, and it's all practical, and I enjoyed that, but Yeah, it's a fun film. It's a neat little monster movie. I like the twist. The whole alcohol concept was kind of funny.
Justin Eric would be safe from the grabbers.
Eric, as you know, I haven't had anything pass my lips for
20 minutes
since this morning.
You had a stiff one this morning?
Yes, I've just drunk a green tea, so. But anyway, Grabbers, because isn't Grabbers, am I right in thinking, Eric, is that an Irish thing or is a gypsy thing, isn't it, grabbing? Isn't it where boys grab girls? Is that right?
I'm not sure.
I think it's
I know it's from the same director as Tormented, which I hated.
Right, okay. No, I think it's from, I don't know if you get that in Ireland, but there's that the big fat gypsy wedding or whatever it is that was on Channel 4.
I'm aware of it, but I've never seen it.
But it seems to be
Eric,
like a...
you might like Grabbers. There's a lot of portly bearded men in there.
I can't imagine.
I'm sold.
Falling down drunk.
Wow. That's like that's the best way to have them, I imagine. Anything else, Joseph?
Yeah, I watched another one called Wreckage, which has Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad, and he's kind of winning all kinds of Emmys right now, and he's a really good actor, so I'm wondering what possessed him to star in this movie, which really sucks. It's basically about these teenagers, or I guess they're 20-somethings. They get their car breaks down, so they sneak into this junkyard at night to try to find a part to fix the car, and there's a serial killer out there. But it kind of wraps that kind of stuff up in the first 20 minutes, and then it follows around the sheriff and his dimwit deputy, and there's a lot of awkward comedy, and I don't know, it's well made, but the acting's not that great, and it doesn't really go anywhere. It's kind of boring. It's like once they reveal who the killer is, which is kind of obvious, you're just like, so that's it. Next. So I didn't really care for it.
Okay. Well, it sounds like one to avoid. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay. Well, thank you, Joseph. And welcome back, Nathan. What have you been watching?
Nothing.
Nothing at all?
I really don't have any recently seen because I haven't watched any scary movies lately.
Okay.
Except for, you know, ones that we're covering.
Yeah, of course. Well, you watched Slaughter Hotel, didn't you?
Oh, I've seen it before several times. I like it a lot, actually. Mm. I love the just all-out massacre at the end. I think that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
See, the problem with me and Nathan is that we haven't had our, like, movie nights on Fridays, so we haven't really been able to watch a lot of movies. So.
You've both recently moved house. Are you now miles away from each other, or?
We've always been, you know. Yeah, I mean, we've never lived, like, real close, not since we lived together, actually.
Probably, like, 10 or 15 minutes away.
Yeah.
Okay, well, it's not too bad. So, but you're going to be resurrecting movie nights at some point?
I don't know either. It's up to Grant, I guess.
Okay, the infamous Grant.
Who's being really weird now.
He's being weird? Why is he being weird?
Because he's not doing movie nights.
Oh. Well,
he's being selfish. That's what he's being.
Okay. Well, Nathan, well, we look forward to your comments on our feature presentations, Double Bill coming up a little bit later. Because we've got an awful lot to pack into the show, I'll just quickly run through what I've been watching. I caught up with Devil, the M. Shyamalan, whatever it is, Night Shyamalan. Is that his name, Shyamalan, or am I mispronouncing that?
Shalimar.
Isn't that an 80s group? But anyway, yep. I caught up with Devil.
That was a candy bar. Or is that a Malamar? That's a Malamar. Never mind.
But which I quite enjoyed, actually. Yeah, it was kind of the Devil in the Lift movie, which has Matt Craven from Happy Birthday to Me as a security guard, or a kind of it's kind of a longish cameo I kind of get. So it's quite nice to see him in that. But yeah, I quite enjoyed it. I didn't guess the identity of the Devil. But I won't say any more. People haven't spoiled it. But I know we spoke about it on a previous show. A couple of the other films I saw, films I hadn't seen before. One was Last Man on Earth, which isn't really a slasher movie, like Devil isn't a slasher movie, but it's the Vincent Price kind of variation or an adaptation of The Amiga Man by, was it Richard Matheson? And it's got the inspiration of Night of the Living Dead. And it's kind of essentially, if you've not seen it, it's Vincent Price is kind of the last living man on Earth, and everyone else has died or come back as sort of vampiric zombies, or who are kind of half human, half vampire, because of this kind of worldwide plague. And he didn't get it because he had been bitten by a vampire bat and he got some kind of immunity. And it was shot in Italy, which is very, you can tell straight away because all the landscape, everything looks very Italian. But it's quite an interesting film, and it was the inspiration for Night of the Living Dead, so that was interesting.
I am Legend. Sorry, Justin, just interrupt. Was the source novel rather than the Amiga Man?
Oh, sorry, so Amiga Man was the one with Charlton Heston, wasn't it? Which was a kind of a version of it. Yeah, sorry. And the other film I saw, which was a bit of a surprise actually, and I hadn't seen it before, was a film called Lady in a Cage from 1964 with Olivia de Havilland. And that kind of came at the tail end of the kind of the old Hollywood bag type Hollywood starlets become, you know, old hag kind of horror movie harridan films that kind of started with Whatever Happened to Baby Jane with Joan Crawford and Betty Davis in 1962. And Olivia de Havilland was in Hush Hush Sweet Charlotte, a kind of the axe murder movie with Betty Davis in 64 as well. Lady in a Cage was a real surprise, actually, because it's the movie debut of James Caan, who went on to lots of films in the 70s, but was also in Misery, the Stephen King adaptation. And it's essentially the kind of the proto house invasion movie, I kind of guess, that was most infamously the Ruggiero Deodato movie,
House at the End of the Street.
That's the one, yes, House at the Edge of the Park.
That's House on the Edge of the Park. Yeah.
So it's kind of like that, because essentially what it is, it's kind of it's definitely worth seeing. It's kind of, it's got Olivia de Havilland, and she's in a house and she's broken her hip, and she uses a lift to go up and down from the first second floor, and during a power cut the lift gets stuck halfway, and there's an alarm bell and she rings it, and this kind of homeless guy breaks in. And then it sets off this chain of events where all these kind of ne'er-do-wells come into the house, and she's stuck in this lift. And in the end, these kind of young punks, sort of led by James Caan, come in and decide they're going to kill her because they want all her stuff. And it's her kind of fighting back and trying to save herself. But it's kind of really, it's actually still packs quite a wallop for a film of 1964. It's quite violent and very tense. And yeah, it's definitely a film I'd suggest checking out. Not in any way a slasher movie, but certainly an interesting precursor to all of those kind of home invasion movies, which become, you know, such a staple after things like Straw Dogs and, you know, House at the Edge of the Park and all the, you know, the Last House on the Left as well. All those different kind of those kind of films. This is kind of seems to be the original one of those. So, is it, any of you seen it?
No.
Yes.
Oh, you have. Oh, what did you think, Nathan?
Oh, I really liked it. I think, like you said, it's ahead of its time. Actually,
It's very ahead of its time, isn't it? It's kind of you know, I can imagine people who you know, Livy de Havilland was in Gone with the Wind, wasn't she? And so, you know, people who like that film, it was a very modern film for its time. And it, in some ways, actually, the other thing which I thought was really interesting, it had almost a nod towards Halloween, with the way that in this film, all this kind of horror is happening inside this house, but outside the house there's just loads of traffic of people going on holiday and back, and it's just completely full of people, and most of the people just ignore what's going on. Even when the kind of violence comes out onto the street, the people, it's not until someone dies that people actually stop and take notice of what's happening. And that's a similar thing with Halloween, that idea of people ignoring, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis's screams, which was from a real story, wasn't it? I think, of a woman who was attacked in New York and all her neighbours ignored her screaming for help. And so it just thought it was quite an interesting kind of like a modern horror movie, sort of, you know, thriller. So, but yes, that's kind of pretty much everything I've been watching. So, Eric, you have a little quiz for us, don't you?
I do have a little quiz for you, yes.
Okay, so is it an all-Halloween quiz?
It's an all-Halloween quiz. The bulk of the questions, but not all of them, are from Halloween 1 and 2, because I know that Joseph said last week that he's not really up on the entire series, certainly. Joseph, you probably haven't seen the more recent ones in a while, have you? Or
I don't really watch past part 2 often, so...
Okay, well, you'll be glad
even
to hear
then,
that.
Even then, just go ahead with the quiz. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, okay. And the bulk of the questions are from parts 1 and 2, and I've tried to make it a little bit easier. The last time I devised a quiz, you all ganged up on me and sent me hate mail and made me cry because you said that things were too difficult.
Yes. Well, I hope it won't be too hard today, Eric.
No, it won't be too hard, Justin.
Good. Okay. Were you waiting for a...
Oh, sorry, yes. So will we go ahead then?
Matron, please, I'm not that kind of doctor.
Right, anyway.
Okay, your first question is, what is this?
Oh, is that to everyone, or just...
Well, yeah, I can just guess that. That's...
That's
you opening a drink and drinking.
Yeah.
So like a Coke can or just something. Like,
grab. Yep, Coke Zero. Sorry.
I got a point, yay.
Oh, I thought it was actually from the movie.
No. That's just me opening a can of Coke before we start.
Okay.
Okay, the first question is for you, Nathan.
Oh, okay.
You ready? There were two major horror icons who originally approached for the role of Sam Loomis, and they both turned it down. Can you name either one?
Christopher Lee.
Yes, a point for you, young Nathan. Christopher Lee, Peter Cushing was the other one. John Carpenter says in the commentary that it was just after Star Wars had come out, and Peter Cushing's agent laughed at him when he said that we can only afford to pay him X number of dollars. So 1 point for Nathan. And that's the quiz over with. Nathan wins.
Hey, well done. Hey.
Awesome.
Okay, Justin, you're next. Lance Guest, he plays Jimmy in part 2. Now, he made an appearance in another famous horror franchise in 1987. Can you name the film?
1987.
Not a slasher movie,
not
but
a horror
movie.
Would it have been... I'm trying to think. I don't know, but I kind of take a stab at Return of the Living Dead part 2.
No, afraid not. I'm going to pass it to Joseph, who's next in line. Joseph?
He was in was it a horror film? Or?
Yes.
In 1987?
Mm-hmm.
Lance Guest.
Famous franchise. Is that the is that typing in IMDb I can hear?
No, I'm not typing. Was it a franchise or was it just a
Oh, he's stalling for time.
It was just one film he was in a famous horror franchise.
Okay, I'm going to guess 1980, what came out in 87? It was one film in a famous horror franchise. Was it Hellraiser?
Afraid not. Sorry. Nathan, do you know?
Oh my God, that was going to be my guess. Hang on. A famous horror franchise. I can't think of any franchises that are not slasher movies. I don't know. The Fly.
No, it was co-starring with Michael Caine in Jaws: The Revenge.
Oh.
So no points for anyone. Joseph, you are next. I should have said these are all cast-related questions on this round. Pamela Susan Shoup, her of the enormous boobies, she starred in which 1970s Nature Takes Revenge movie?
Was she in the first Halloween?
She was in the second Halloween. She gets into the hot tub.
Okay.
Nudie and stuff.
With what's his face? With Leo Rossi?
Yes.
Bud?
Yeah, that's her.
Okay. Now, what was the question again?
What famous 1970s Nature Takes Revenge movie was she in?
Empire of the Ants?
That's it. Well done.
I think you stalled for time so you could look that up. Yes.
I think so too.
I'm not even on the computer.
Along with that. She's in that with Joan Collins, of course. A favorite sort of campy 70s movie of mine. Okay, sticking with cast questions, Nathan, we're back to you. Anne-Marie Martin gets an uncredited role as Darcy in Halloween 2. Can you name the slasher movie she was in the previous year, 1980, where she was acting under a different name?
That's Eddie Benton from Prom Night.
Exactly. Well done. And Nathan, you've got 2 out of 2.
Wow.
Justin, I'm afraid this is probably the hardest question on the entire quiz, and it's fallen for you, I'm afraid. This is quite a tricky one. I'll be very surprised if you get it. But can you tell me what links Happy Days to Halloween? Happy Days, the TV sitcom.
Yeah, to Halloween. Can you give me a clue, seeing it's a very hard one?
Okay.
Hard.
The link between Happy Days and Halloween could also said to be a link between Galaxy of Terror and Halloween.
Is it Erin Moran?
Yes.
Was she up for a role in Halloween?
No, I'm going to give you half a point because it is Erin Moran related. Her older brother Tony Moran plays the unmasked Michael Myers at the end of the film.
Okay.
I'm actually very surprised. Well done, Justin. This is why you are the horror king you are.
When I was a kid, I thought Tony Moran was Tony Moron.
Well, at least I got half a point. At least I'm off.
Yes, you're off the mark. Okay. And Joseph. The final cast question for you. Wayne's World, party time. Excellent. What's that got to do with Halloween 2?
Dana Carvey had a cameo in Halloween 2.
Well done. Another point for you.
Yeah.
Okay, so at the end of the cast round, 2 for Nathan, half a point for Justin, and 2 for Joseph.
Wow.
Okay, we're on next to the observations round. Okay, Nathan? Can you tell me what song is playing in the car in Halloween 1 when Laurie and Annie are smoking the joint?
Don't Fear the Reaper by the Blue Oyster Cult.
Well done. A song from long before your time, I'm surprised.
I like that song.
It's a great song. Justin, can you name 2 of the comic books that Tommy keeps under the sofa? They name 3, so if you can name 2 of them.
Tales from the Crypt.
No,
I
thought you said you've seen Halloween 1500 times.
Well, I have, but I would have known Don't Fear the Reaper. You see, I think it's a stitch up. This quiz. Is it Mr. Mephisto? No, Mr.
That's oh, what, dear. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Oh, what, the humanity.
I've no
very surprised
idea.
Here.
Yeah. Joseph, can you name 2 of the 3 comic books that Tommy keeps under the sofa in Halloween 1?
Probably not, but I'll take a guess that one is not Tales from the Crypt, but it's got the similar name, like Strange Tales of something.
No, I'm going to pass it over to Nathan.
One of them's Tarantula Man.
One of them is Tarantula Man.
Neutron Man?
Yes, and the third one is Laser Man, so that's a point for Nathan. Flying into the lead here. Okay, Joseph, on the observation round, what in Halloween 2, what does Bud hate on his pizza?
Oh, gosh. Mushrooms?
Exactly. Well done.
Really? I just guessed. Remember.
You're correct. Okay, back to Nathan. Nathan, which murder method links Halloween 2 and Friday the 13th Part 2, both released the same year?
Murder method?
Yeah.
Okay, hang on. Let me think here for a minute about the deaths. I don't remember anybody getting their face burned off.
I know this one. So I know all of Nathan's, you see. If I had Nathan's questions, I'd be winning.
Well, I know you're going to get this. You would get this one. I mean, there's throat slittings in both. I mean, the name.
I hadn't factored that in, but...
I see a point for that.
I'm changing the question to apart from throat slittings.
All right, now I got to rethink this.
I think I know what it is.
There's actually two. There's two similar ones which aren't throat slittings.
All right. You see, now you're questioning the chairperson, and you're disqualified now.
Do I get 4 points if I get all
my questions are watertight?
Just think of throat slittings. I'm going to give this one to Justin.
Okay, Justin. What was the one I was thinking of? Can you guess?
Is it the... Well, there's the one with the sharp, pointy objects going into the temple with Alice in the beginning of Friday 13th.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll have to give you a point for that because I wasn't thinking of that. But can you name the other one?
And also the hammer to the head.
That was the one I was thinking of. So yeah. A point for Justin. Well done.
Don't I get 4 points because I got two, one that you didn't think?
No.
Okay.
Sorry.
But you know, in Halloween 2, okay, where the nurse gets now, the hypodermic needle through the side of the head, just Alex, gets the ice pick through the head as well.
They're two completely different murder weapons, though, so that's why you don't get an extra point.
Okay.
Well, if anyone heard, anyone will have heard what Nathan just said.
What did he say?
He said in a dream sequence.
Of course,
yes.
Okay, Justin, it's your question. In the TV version of Halloween 1, why does Linda call over to Laurie's house?
I can't remember. All I can remember is Jamie Lee Curtis got a hair in a towel, yes. Because it's so is it something hair related? I can't remember.
It's not hair related, but I'll give you a clue. Annie rings up with the same request on the phone as Linda's request.
I can't remember. No, sorry.
Okay, Joseph?
In the TV version?
It's a scene that's not in the theatrical release. It's only in the TV version.
Is it calling about the guy?
No,
nothing to do with guys. Boyfriend or whatever?
No. Nathan, do you know?
Doesn't she want to borrow Laurie's, top? Or sweater or shirt.
To borrow her blouse.
Okay.
Yeah, and then Annie rings up looking to borrow her blouse. So Nathan's in a storming lead here. Joseph, this is the final question in the observation round. Oh, actually, this is a really difficult one. I apologize in advance. Okay. On the blackboard in the school in Halloween 2, one of the assignments is to write an imaginary story about what?
Samhain.
The black has Samhain or Samhain written on it in blood, but underneath that in chalk is written, write an imaginary story about...
Oh, God.
Now, I do recall when you did the quiz, you asked what color the credits were on prom night, so this is my revenge.
Okay, imaginary story about fall?
No, sorry. Nathan, do you know?
About Halloween?
No. Justin?
About Bob Hoskins?
Correct. I wish.
No, it bonus was points.
10 points.
It was A Trip to a Planet.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Okay, at the end of that round, we have Nathan on 5, Justin on 1.5,
woohoo,
and Joseph on 3. Now we're on to the audio clips round. As far as I remember, I play an audio clip. It has some words obscured, and you've got to tell me what is obscured in the clip. So, Justin, will you play clip A?
Okay, clip A. Oh,
round 3, clip A.
Round 3, clip
question A, or whatever.
I've got round 3, question B.
Have you got round 3, question A?
We might have to hold on. Let me just 1 second. Okay. Okay, and by the magic of internet radio, here we go.
I thought you were babysitting tonight.
The only reason she babysits is to have a place.
Shit. There. I have a place for that. I forgot my
chunky Kit Kats.
So who cares? I always forget my
chunky Kit Kats.
Nathan, what was missing?
I know that
chemistry
was different.
Book. Her chemistry book.
Well done. That's correct. Well, actually, play the answer there, is what I was meant to say.
I forgot my chemistry book.
Well done.
So who cares? I always forget my chemistry book.
Okay. Justin, you're up next with clip B.
Okay, so round 3, question B.
Dr. Mixter, it's an emergency. Dr. Mixter, it's Laurie Strode. She's had a reaction to...
Chunky Kit Kat.
You better come quick.
Okay, what has Laurie Strode had a reaction to?
Well, she's had a reaction to the drugs, but I can't remember if it was specific. Sorry?
I'm going to give you a point. It's well, play the answer and I'll... No, that's not the answer.
Dr. Mixter, it's Laurie Strode. She's had a reaction to the medication.
Yeah, medication
drugs. You better
drugs.
Come quick.
Close enough.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so that's a point. Okay, Joseph,
a reaction to the Toya video or something, wouldn't it? But that would have been cruel if I'd said
okay,
that,
I'm taking the point away from you now.
I'm not going to win, am I? I don't care.
Okay, Joseph's next.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean it like that. I can go out with Brady tomorrow night. It's no big deal.
She wants to go out tonight. It's my fault you can't.
Well, tonight we're going to do something better. We're going to go...
Eating chunky Kit Kats.
I don't want to.
Okay, whatever they're called, going to do? Rachel and Jamie.
You don't even remember their names.
Yeah.
Good job you're not taking the quiz.
Trick or treating?
Well done. Oh, no, hang on. I meant, okay, let's listen and see if you're right.
Well, tonight we're going to do something better. We're going to go trick or treating.
Yay, well done, Joseph. You got a point. Okay, more audio clips. This time it's Halloween en Español. You have to tell me... roughly sort of what's going on in each scene. So, Justin, will you play round 4, question A? This is for Nathan.
¿Podrías pedírselo a Dick Baxter? Ese saldría contigo.
Preferiría salir con Ben Tramer.
¿Ben Tramer? ¡Lo sabía! Así que tú también piensas en esas cosas, Lori.
¡Calla!
¡Es guapo! ¡Ben Tramer!
Well, what was that, Justin, Nathan?
Ben Tramer? So you do think about things like that, huh, Laurie?
Well, let's have a listen to the answer and see if you're right.
Well, you could ask Dick Baxter. He'd go out with you.
I'd rather go with Ben Tramer.
Yay, you're right, Nathan.
Ben Tramer? Yeah. I knew it! So you do think about things like that, huh, Laurie?
Shut up.
He's cute! Ben Tramer!
Okay,
was the Ben Tramer,
Justin, sorry?
Was the Ben Tramer sort of thing in the Spanish a bit of a giveaway?
Well, yeah. I told you I made this quiz easy. Well, not easy enough for you, obviously, Justin. But
I told you I could have got if I'd got Nathan's questions, I would have got them all right so far.
Yeah. Well, you'll probably get this
way
one
to downplay me. I appreciate that.
Oh, sorry. Oops. anyway, Justin, your Halloween en Español clip.
Ben Lucky. Siéntate sobre mí. No me hagas llorar. Necesito tu calor.
Well, can
Amazing
you tell what that was?
Amazing Grace, come sit on my face.
Well, play the answer and we'll see if you're correct.
Amazing Grace.
Yay, a point.
Come sit on my face.
At last.
Don't make me cry. I need your pie.
Okay, Joseph, you get the last clip
here. Yeah, I would have got that one easily, so I won't get this one.
I'm pretty sure you'll get this one.
Me parece que Raquel tiene algo escondido. Tom parum para, pa para para, pa para para.
Ta-chan!
Pam para para, pam para para, pam para para, pam para para, pam 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 pam. A Billy le vas a gustar mucho.
Se va a caer de espalda.
Well, can you guess that
is
one?
Is it bam 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 bam?
Well, what installment is it from then?
Halloween. That's not an installment. That's the franchise. It's the first one.
It's not from the first one.
Oh,
it's not.
Nathan.
That's Tina's theme song from part five.
It is indeed. Well, no, hang on.
Hey, wait a minute.
Let's listen to the, what?
You said you weren't going to do anything outside of Halloween 1 and 2.
I said
he had a couple.
Yeah.
And I told you I had never watched those movies that often.
Yeah, well,
cheat.
You snooze, you lose. Let's play the answer.
Ah, I wonder what Rachel's hiding behind door number 3. Ba-ba-da-ba-da, ba-ba-da-ba-da, ba-ba-da, ba-ba-da. Ta-da!
She's the reason I don't watch that movie that often.
She's the reason I do watch that movie so often.
Oh, I like
Billy is going to have
Okay, so at the end of the quiz, that's the end of the quiz. Sad. Put on sad faces, everyone.
Oh.
Yeah. The winner is. Oh, sorry, in last place. It's supposed slasher expert, Justin, with 3.5 points.
I was robbed.
Joseph is in second place with 4 points, but way out in the lead, it's Nathan with 8 points.
Yay!
Yay. How did he go from 5 to 8?
Yeah.
Because he...
Favoritism, I think.
I don't know. Mm.
Well,
my counting
well,
skills.
Well, look on the bright side. Even if I did have 5, I still beat both of you.
Yeah.
That is
true. Well, I would have had 5 if it wouldn't have been for that meddling Eric.
Yes.
Sorry, I shouldn't.
It was just chunky Kit Kat.
Yeah. Oh,
well done, Eric. That was great. That was a really good quiz. It would have been better if I'd won, but it was still good, even if it was slightly fixed. But thank you for that.
There was nothing fixed about it.
Okay. Well, no, thank you, Eric. Is any bonus questions?
No, I don't think so. Apart from just one interesting fact about the Spanish version of Halloween that I found on YouTube, it was all printed in reverse. So even the credits were backwards for bizarre reason. I don't know why.
Hmm. What, as in like a
was
negative?
It flipped? Was it like flipped to the...
It was flipped, like the negative was printed in...
They do that to avoid copyright issues.
Yeah, but I was surprised. All of the Halloween installments, including the two recent Rob Zombie ones, are available in full on YouTube, even the right way around. Wow. Which is, I thought, strange, yeah, for big sort of studio movies.
They are for now. Give them time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I uploaded a clip once and it got taken down for copyright issues.
Mm. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of a lucky dip, isn't it? Is that all you have to do, put stuff up around the wrong way to negate?
Pretty much. Yeah.
Or you can run the audio, like a pitch. You can bring the pitch down like half a point.
Do they use kind of automated software to kind of detect, to scan through?
Yeah, I mean, you can extract the audio into Audacity, change the pitch, and then put it back on the track and upload it, and it won't be able to detect it. Like, YouTube has some kind of, like, I don't know what it is, but I guess they have a big database of stuff to look for.
Wow, okay, I didn't know that. Okay, well, interesting. Well, thank you very much, Eric.
I have a quick bonus question for y'all.
Okay. Yeah.
What book is in front of me right now?
50 Shades of Grey.
No.
How to Make Friends and Keep Them, Volume 4?
No.
Is it Hysteria Continues book or the Teenage Wasteland or the slasher movie book?
Oh, you're right. You get a point.
He was looking up everything in that book.
By J.A. Kurzweil. I don't think some of this stuff is in here. Like, there's no translation of Spanish in this book.
No, yeah,
there
exactly.
is. Just haven't gotten to it yet.
Mm-hmm.
Well. Oops. Oh, hello?
Yes.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, you sounded a bit remix. Strange there, Justin.
You skipped yes. for a little bit. Yeah.
I did, having a little remix.
You're kind of like Kylie Minogue and I Should Be So Lucky, where she goes,
I am Justin Kerr as well.
Well, hopefully that is the last of our little Skype issues. But I think it's probably time to start the first of our feature presentations, isn't it? So mm-hmm. I will lead in, because Eric, you're going to lead in on Halloween 2, aren't you?
Am I?
You are. That's what you said you were going to do.
Did I?
Yes, you did.
Oh, shit.
So while I lead in on Halloween...
Let me scribble some notes
you
down.
You better put something down. Okay, here's the trailer for the original Halloween 1978. Get to it, Eric.
Halloween night. A small American town. 15 years ago.
I spent 8 years trying to reach him, and then another 7 trying to keep him locked up, because I realized that what was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil. I think he'll come back.
Exploring uncharted territory.
And totally charted.
Just talk.
Sure, sure.
The only reason she babysits is to have a
Halloween.
It is 1963, Halloween. The police are called to an otherwise unremarkable house in Haddonfield, Illinois, only to discover that 15-year-old Judith Myers has been stabbed to death by a 6-year-old brother, Michael. After being locked away for 15 years, Myers breaks out on the night before Halloween 1978. He returns to his hometown to pick up where he left off. Hot in his tail is psychiatrist Dr. Loomis, who is perhaps the only one who knows how dangerous he is. A shape lurks in the shadows of suburbia, a lethal and almost otherworldly threat amongst the safe scares of the evening. He silently stalks a small group of teenagers, of whom only one will survive to see the daybreak after Halloween. It's difficult to think of a time where there wasn't Halloween, I kind of guess, especially if you're a slasher movie fan. Halloween is, I've said it before and I'll obviously say it again, it's probably my favourite horror movie, if not movie of any kind of genre movie, or not genre movie, just any movie of all time. And so it's, well, I was watching it again today, and it still has the power, and it still has the power to scare, and it still has the power to kind of awe, I kind of guess, and it's such a beautifully put together movie. But the trouble is, it's one of those things that, I mean, I'm sure for like Eric with Toya, the masterpieces that Toya put out, that you must listen to them so many times that sometimes it becomes something else. Would you agree with that, Eric?
No, they remain perfect pieces of pop music even 20, 30 years later.
Okay, all right. Well, it's like with albums sometimes. If you over-listen to an album sometimes, you can listen to it so too much. And that's always a danger with films like Halloween. But having said that, every time I watch it, I still it is. It's not like watching a painting, I kind of guess, but it's what like watching. Well, it is a masterpiece. It's, you know, I think it's a fantastic movie, and it's kind of especially seeing it on Blu-ray, because I think the very first time I saw it was probably on would have been on VHS and probably a pan scan version of it back in the 80s. And I've said before plenty of times that I saw Halloween 2 first, which we're going to be talking about as a second feature presentation of today. But I saw that back in about 1983, and I didn't see Halloween for a few years, the original, for a few years afterwards. So it was a bit of a strange introduction to it. But I remember people. I still remember watching Halloween for the first time with some friends, and everyone jumping throughout it and screaming and laughing. And it, again, you know, to my mind, it is the perfect movie. I have to kind of limit myself to watching it once a year now, because otherwise there is a danger that I just kind of, it becomes kind of a background movie and I can't really take it in anymore. And so one of the biggest regrets is I'm not going to see it on the big screen this year, because my schedule's clashing, but I would love to have seen it on the big screen. And I know certainly when I wrote about it on Hysteria Lives, after many years, I didn't really want to tackle it, because I thought, well, what can be said about Halloween that's not already been said? And in reality, there's very little that can be said about Halloween that hasn't been said. It's a bit like when we covered Friday the 13th Part 2, that the one thing that we could say about it was that we noticed someone with a boom mic lying on the ground, where Eric first saw that. And I think with Halloween, is there anything...
I made the front of Time magazine for that observation.
Yes, no, you got a Nobel Peace Prize upcoming.
I did, as well. Yeah.
But I thought it was, you know, we couldn't do a podcast about slasher movies without eventually covering Halloween. So it'll just be interesting to see, you know, what we can say about a film that has been dissected so many times by so many different people over the years. So, you know, without further ado, Nathan, I mean, what are your gut feelings now about Halloween after all these years?
Well, I've always loved it. So, I mean, I can't think of anything really bad about the movie, because I only see good things with it. I will say that growing up, when I was a little kid, I preferred the sequel just because, you know, it had a higher body count and everything. But obviously now that I'm older, I can see the original like is far superior. Even though I did love the sequel, but yeah, I love the original because I love the characters. You know, I really like the friendship between the three girls, and a lot of people that I've watched it with now, like, they are not big fans of Annie. They just think she's flat out mean to her friends, but I never think that. I always think that she's just like her. She just has a sarcastic personality. But I really think that, you know, obviously, you know, she does care about her friends regardless. I mean, come on, she gets Lori high. I mean, you only do that for your friends. And yes, her dad had to have smelled that marijuana. There's no way he didn't smell that.
Yes.
Unless, like, he lost his sense of smell or something. Let's see. I love the one scene that I've always loved, or two scenes, actually. Well, I mean, of course, I love the whole movie, but I love the scene with the hedge where Laurie sees Michael at the hedge and then steps behind it. And I also love the scene where she looks out her window and sees him standing in the Riddles' backyard at the clothesline. And I love how the window like falls while she's looking at him. I think that's a really creepy scene. And why would Annie call Lori with her mouth full? I mean, like, she had her mouth full of apple or whatever, and she could, I mean, she calls Lori and picks up and can't respond when Lori wants to know who it is.
Yeah,
I assumed that was just
Annie.
She was being deliberately mischievous, I assumed.
Well, maybe so. But no, I mean, I like I said, I really love the movie, and I will say this: the music helps enhance the movie like even better, because it's got a great soundtrack. But I put in my earphones and I've downloaded the Halloween soundtrack, and I was walking from work to go get lunch and listening to that music. It was probably the scariest walk I've ever had to go get Chinese food.
Indeed, yes. I mean, it's funny, isn't it? I mean, just as an aside, one of the famous stories is that John Carpenter showed the film to a female executive, and without the music, and she just said it wasn't scary. So the film is kind of, it really, I mean, I haven't, you know, I'm not sad enough to have sat and tried to watch a film without music on, because obviously that would be pretty sad. But I imagine it really is. It's kind of the perfect example of a film that is kind of, you know, it goes hand in hand with the musical score, doesn't it? It really kind of does make it. So, well, thank you, Nathan. I mean, I'm sure we'll talk a lot more about it before we move on to the sequel. But Eric, how do you feel about all these years?
Well, shockingly and controversially, I didn't like Halloween when I saw it first. Now, I saw, like you, Halloween 2 long before I saw the first one. For some reason, it was never available in the video rental shops in the city I was living in growing up. So I got it as a sell-through release for Christmas one year. Hmm. And it was a particularly awful presentation. It was on the Channel 5 label. The colours were faded, it was pan and scan, it was slightly squeezed, the sound was muffled, so you couldn't hear some of the dialogue. And I just sat there and I was just bored by it, to be honest. Like, a lot of the scares were missing because of the presentation. Like, one of my favourite scenes is where he drives past and three girls go, isn't that Devon Graham? And you can see him, as he drives past, he's staring at them. You can see the sort of the front of his mask, whereas you couldn't see that in that. And the scene where Laurie is backed into the doorframe and his image slowly appears. Mm. I mean, that was missing as well, because the print was so bad. So I took a widescreen version of the film that I saw on BBC Two maybe 3 or 4 years later for me to fully appreciate the film. And my opinion changed completely. Nathan said, I love the three girls. I don't think Annie is a mean character in any way. I think the small town atmosphere is really captured by the fact that these three girls with very different personalities are all best of friends. You can sort of get the sense that they've been friends, you know, since kindergarten. You've got sort of the bookish nerd in Laurie, the cheerleader in Linda, and the sort of sarcastic, you know, pot smoking one in Annie. But I like the way they all interact, and they're all good friends, even though they are from very sort of coming from very different perspectives. You know, and the film's not blessed with the most elaborate script, but I think the sort of the characters help, you know, keep it going during the early parts. I think the scares are very effective. You know, even something as simple as the shape standing across the road when Laurie sees him when she's in class, you know, and she sees him in the backyard, as Nathan was saying, that type of stuff is really, really effective, and something that's missing maybe from a lot of the later sequels in particular. Mm. And I think in this one, Donald Pleasence as Loomis is pitched at a perfect level. He gets a bit too much for me from part four onwards. He becomes a bit too hysterical and a bit too pantomime for my liking. But I think in the first two installments, I think he's very effective as the sort of nemesis to Michael Myers. I like the fact that a lot of the creepiness in the film happens in broad daylight. You know, as I said, seeing Michael Myers drive past in the car, seeing him across the road, you know, standing in the backyard, that type of thing. You know, it's not all about spooky, dark, you know, gothic mansions or anything. You know, it's bringing horror to a very sort of realistic location. But as I said, I didn't enjoy the film when I first saw it, but that was solely because the crap presentation I was given. I think Halloween 2 is more forgiving of a VHS pan and scan presentation than Halloween 1 was. Halloween 1 really sort of you need to see in its proper ratio.
Mm. Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because that whole thing about Halloween, although it kind of, we can talk a little bit about this in a minute, but it's taking stuff, ancient stuff, isn't it? The whole Samhain thing and the horror behind Halloween and the real notion of Halloween and transplanting it into American suburbia. Because even with a film like The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, although that's kind of quite a modern horror film in a lot of ways, it still goes to a spooky old house, doesn't it, which has kind of got a gothic feel to it. And a lot of the films from before, like Terror at Red Wolf Inn, again, it's kind of like a gothic mansion, isn't it? So even films from a few years before Halloween, even something like Black Christmas, that's still got a gothic feel to it, isn't it? Like, although, again, it's kind of modern, it's got, you know, that big house is this kind of big gothic rambling kind of sorority house, isn't it? And so it has that. It's kind of probably one of the first kind of modern horror films in that sense, perhaps. But
Yeah, and what I really like about Michael Myers as well, and Corey Feldman actually says this in Slice and Dice, is what makes him so menacing is that he doesn't seem to care. He won't run to catch a victim, he'll just walk, and you get the sort of sense that, you know, if the victim gets away, so be it, I'll just go, you know, target somebody else. I don't care, I'm just that evil. You know, I love the fact that he never, you know, goes past walking pace. I think that makes him very creepy.
He's kind of, again, like with Leatherface, this kind of squealing killer. And not to say, you know, obviously Texas Chainsaw Massacre is a fantastic movie, but, and in like Black Christmas, the killer is kind of like a raving lunatic, whereas in Halloween, it is this kind of, just kind of, it's like Jaws, isn't it? Almost like the film Jaws, where you just, almost like the shark, isn't he? Because he's just kind of slow, methodical, without giving anything away, this kind of blank slate. So, Joseph, what are your thoughts after these years?
Well, I firmly believe a film can be diluted, you know, from too much viewing and being too much implemented too much into the pop culture phenomenon. And certainly Halloween is kind of, I don't want to say worn out its welcome, but I mean, it's been dissected to death. So I'm kind of at a loss for what to really say about it, except, I really do think it's a great film. I've always preferred Black Christmas. I just think it's a scarier film. I think it's probably put together a little bit better, but I still love Halloween. I think the argument that it boils down to for me is like comparing it to the Rob Zombie remake, which I hate, and that the original worked for me because you don't know why Michael is doing this, and I think it's scarier that some guy could just come after you for no rhyme and no reason, rather than, oh, mommy didn't take me trick-or-treating, mommy was a stripper whore, or something stupid like that. And I think that's what Halloween is brilliant at, is because it's just this standard story of these babies, this babysitter, and in this small little suburb town, and then just this guy who murdered there years ago just breaks out of an asylum and goes back and killing random people. And I know in the sequel, which we'll talk about, they kind of tie it in, you know, with him and Jamie being brother and sister, and I didn't really care for that. So I think the whole murder aspect works better in the original, because it's, you don't know why he's doing it. He's just a silent boogeyman, as you know, Dr. Loomis says pretty much 100 times throughout the series. But yeah, it's just, it really is a good one. I really don't know what else to say about it, so I'm going to get our special friend, Jamie Lee Curtis, to see what she has to say. What do you think, Jamie?
I knew you were going to do that. Oh, I hate you,
Joseph. The chance of ever getting Jamie Lee Curtis on the show, and now... Nose bagged. I mean, nose dived quite significantly.
What? You're as bad as he is, Justin.
For goodness sake. I'm sure Jamie can take a joke, and hopefully she would be able to with
One
Joseph.
Thing I will say about, because I saw Halloween 1 after Halloween 2, I never got to see it without knowing that they're, you know, set up as brother and sister. And I would like to have had that experience.
Well, I think that's the thing that does make Halloween supremely scary. If you try and I've said it before, it's like, I think Mark Kermode, the critic, said that Halloween wasn't hurt by its sequels, but I think it was, because how could it not be if you had this in the back of your mind that Jamie Lee Curtis was, you know, sort of Michael Myers' sister? Because I think historically, if you look at it in the context of the time and the, because the 70s and the late 70s was the apex of the serial killer, wasn't it? It was this idea where the serial killer was everywhere in the media, and you had all the real life serial killers, you know, Ted Bundy and all these kind of people who, and the scariness of those was, the fact is if you were in the wrong place at the wrong time, you became a victim, and there was nothing you could do about it. I mean, some people are luckier than others. I think Debbie Harry, the singer Debbie Harry, once said that she thought that she was almost picked up by Ted Bundy, and she could have easily become a victim. I think she just didn't get into his car or something, didn't happen. And but the fact is that people were just taken, you know, literally off the streets, and it was at random. So it's like a shark literally going around, and if you happen to be in the wrong place, you became the victim. And this was with Halloween, that was the thing, because there's a shot, isn't there, when Jamie Lee goes, and Laurie Strode goes up with Tommy Doyle to the house to drop the keys off, or whatever it is, to pick the keys, and Michael Myers steps out from behind the door and looks through the screen at her, and it's almost, it was just that that the fact is she crossed his path, that she became the whole sequence of events started, and he just picked her and then her friends, and it was just this random act, which was the scariest thing. And of course the whole sister thing does dilute that, but I mean, as we'll speak about a little bit later, I'm sure it was the only thing that John Carpenter could think up, you know, when he came to write the sequel. I mean, one of the things I did, be interesting to hear what people's thoughts are about the supernatural. I mean, how much of the supernatural do you believe is in the original Halloween? Because I know certainly a number of people have always said that Halloween, Michael Myers, isn't a supernatural entity, whereas I've always erred on the side that he is to a lesser or greater degree. I mean, what are your thoughts? I mean, do you think...
I would disagree. I would say he's just a psycho. I don't think there's any supernatural kind of aspect undercurrent or anything like that. I mean, I could see where people would say that, but I don't know. Maybe I'm a stickler for the kind of straightforward, you know, slash, stab kind of thing, and I don't want any kind of supernatural aspect in that. So maybe I'm biased, but I don't know. That's just my opinion.
I mean, what about you, Eric? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, certainly in the first two, I like to think of him as just a man who has some kind of incredible, you know, resistance to all this damage that's inflicted on him. But, I mean, when you get to sort of Halloween 5 and 6 in particular, you have to sort of, I suppose, get on board with the supernatural aspect. But for the first two, I like to think of him as just a particularly robust man.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Nathan?
I agree.
You agree, so you don't.
Yeah. I mean, like that Eric used the word robust.
Yes. Well, I mean, the thing is, I personally think both John Carpenter and Deborah Hill did sort of say that there was a supernatural. They added a supernatural element to it to some degree. I mean, Deborah Hill kind of famously said they went back to the old idea of Samhain. That Halloween was the night where all the souls are let out to wreak havoc on the living, and then came up with the story about the most evil kid who ever lived. I mean, obviously, you've got the whole end where he's shot and he's kind of shot with enough bullets to kill a normal man. He doesn't die. I mean, we've spoken about this before, but obviously the novelization of the book is much more explicit in the kind of supernatural angle, I think. I don't know. I mean, I think it kind of works in both ways, but he's a boogeyman in the sense that of a kind of traditional horror, you know, kind of spook ghoul type thing, but also the boogeyman again in relation to that that I said earlier about serial killers and this kind of idea of this man, this legend, you know, because already when like Tommy Doyle goes, when they go to their house, he sort of says the house is haunted, and there's already that kind of this idea that Michael Myers kind of haunts that town. But rather than just being an urban legend, he is real and he kind of comes back. So I don't know. I think it works in both contexts, but I think certainly at the end of Halloween, which obviously I'm sure you, if you haven't seen Halloween, then obviously we'd urge you would do, but I imagine that 99.9% of the people listening to this have. And certainly with the end of Halloween, I think John Carpenter said that he wanted it to be like a Twilight Zone style ending. It wasn't set up to be a sequel as such. Although having said that, I think Donald Pleasance said that John Carpenter hinted to him there would be a sequel at the end of the film. But yeah, this idea that Michael Myers was everywhere and he's somehow this kind of supernatural presence when he vanishes from the grass. But I don't know. I mean, John Carpenter seems to be quite... not conflicted. He seems to be. He's not always. What's the word for it? He's not always. It doesn't always tell the same stories about things. It's a bit like the whole "have sex and die" adage, where he sort of says that it wasn't, the kids weren't being punished. They just happened to be teenagers who were preoccupied with sex. But then he also talks about Michael Myers being the spirit of the repressed, and Laurie Strode also being spirit of the repressed. In fact, Laurie and Michael Myers having more in common than Laurie does possibly with her friends. So there's a lot of interesting undercurrents, I think, to the film. But on the other hand, what I
find the most far-fetched thing about the film is in the opening sequence where Judith Myers goes upstairs to have sex with her boyfriend. We see the light go out, and then 80 seconds later, I timed it, we see him coming downstairs with his clothes on saying, "I'll see you tomorrow."
He was a teenager.
Yeah, but still, come on. Come on, exactly. 80 seconds.
Well, yes. It was a quickie.
It was a very quickie.
So what do we think about, I kind of hate to use the word kids, but kids today, the people who liked the Rob Zombie version of Halloween, I mean, how do we feel that they would view a film that was, how many years, it's going to be 40 years old in about 6 years' time, isn't it?
Yeah,
35 years. Kill them all.
I don't think they would enjoy it. I think it'd be too slow for them. I think that there's all the mayhem is kind of off screen, so I don't think they would enjoy it, to be honest.
Because
no one's cursing desensitized.
I think they probably appreciate it when they're a bit older, but like a 16-year-old kid nowadays, I don't think would get Halloween.
I think we've spoken about this before, haven't we? There seems to be this kind of an age. A break between people who like the new versions for Halloween and the ones that that don't, and I kind of guess that's always going to be the case. I mean I've seen some quite impassioned defences of Rob Zombie's Halloween, and I kind of, you know, in some ways I'd like to, if I can ever bring myself to do, sit down and watch them again with an open mind, but I can't see I'd ever like them any more than the original one and two. But it does seem to be this kind of divide.
Yeah, sorry, when I was 16, like, I would have had no interest in Psycho or maybe some of the Giallos. You know, I think that would have been too slow for me. And, you know, I was all about Evil Dead and, you know, Friday the 13th back then. So, you know, I think 16-year-olds mightn't appreciate Halloween, but I think when they get to maybe, you know, my age, which is 27, that they might appreciate them. What was that?
Nothing.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I kind of hated Suspiria when I first saw it. I thought it was awful. Yeah. I thought it was rubbish.
And, because I saw it after reading so much about it, and I thought it was overrated. But I think it's a film, again, like Halloween, it's a film you need to see in as good a presentation as possible.
Yes, absolutely, for it to work. So, it's kind of interesting. I mean, I'm kind of almost loath to kind of go into the background of Halloween just because, again, it's something that people already know, don't they? I kind of guess.
Well, one thing that I was listening to various, you know, audio commentaries and watching extra features and that on DVDs over the past few days, and one thing I did learn that I didn't know before was that the original opening credit sequence wasn't going to be the pan in on the pumpkin. It was going to be a pan down the street, which would end up with a, you know, capturing an image of the mask lying on the ground.
Okay, I didn't know that.
That was his original intention. But I think for budgetary reasons, they just went into a studio with a jack-o'-lantern, and I think it's much more effective.
Well, I'm going to guess some of the things. I mean, just capping some of the things a lot of people probably already know, but maybe you don't. But the film, you know, was set in the Midwest, but it was actually filmed in California. And there's famously, you can see palm trees, can't you, in one shot. And all of the trees are very full of green leaves, but they had lots of specially painted brown leaves put on the ground. And so it's a testament, actually, to the film that it works as well as it does, that it was shot in May. But you can forgive that, you know.
That aspect has never been a problem for me, to be honest.
No.
Yeah. I think the first two managed to feel really autumnal and really feel seasonal, whereas I think later sequels probably don't feel like it's Halloween. There's certainly some kind of ambience about the first two that I think really captures the you know, time of year.
Yeah.
Regardless of palm trees in the background or
I always thought Halloween 5 felt almost wintry, sort of. Or maybe it's 4, I can't remember which one. I get those two confused. I barely watch them, so but one of them felt like it was in the winter time instead of like fall. It just kind of seemed cold and dead, and rather than kind of the leaves changing color.
Well, but 4 and 5 were filmed in Salt Lake City, whereas 1 and 2 were in California. So I don't know the geography. So is Salt Lake City West Coast, East
Utah,
Coast?
That's Utah's Midwest, I would assume. think.
It's so. Ironic, isn't it, with like Friday 13th, that was when that was filmed as if it should have been summer, wasn't it? And that was filmed in the fall, wasn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's actually kind of the other way around, I kind of guess. I mean, what do you think would have been like? I mean, so, Donald Pleasance, I think it's difficult to think of anyone else playing Donald Pleasance, but I find it difficult to try and get my head around what Christopher Lee or who was the other one? It was
Peter Cushing.
Peter Cushing would have made of that role.
Yeah, it's very difficult to imagine, especially when Donald Pleasance appeared in all the sequels as well, and he's become so synonymous with the franchise.
I don't think
it's kind of like the shattering revelation when I learned that Eric Stoltz was originally playing Marty McFly in Back to the Future. I just can't.
Yeah.
It was a half joke, but whatever.
Well, no, you can actually see footage. There is footage of Eric Stoltz in that role, which is, you know, which is very really bizarre odd to watch. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, can you imagine anyone else instead of Jamie Lee Curtis playing, you know, in that role?
Oh, I know what Joseph's about to say.
What?
About Shergar or Red Rum or something.
Oh, huh? I would never say anything like that.
Or the woman who played Karen in Knots Landing. Michelle Lee, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I would have got Thunderbolt for Jamie Lee Curtis's performance. But that's
See, I knew you were going to say something like that.
Actually, I did know a background thing about Halloween. They actually discovered that when they were casting for the lead, which went to Jamie Lee Curtis.
Here we go. Mm.
They got her from a mucilage factory. A glue factory, I'm sorry.
Whatever. Okay, I have an interesting factoid
about... They say a glue factory.
You'll probably know this already, but Kyle Richards, sister of Kim Richards, who had appeared in Assault on Precinct 13, Kyle Richards is the aunt of Paris Hilton, the wonderful, wonderful Paris Hilton.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah.
6 degrees of Kevin Bacon and all that.
That should have been one of your questions.
It was going to be, but then it was relegated. It was on the extra features instead.
Well... Yeah. I'll tell you, here's some other factoids which people might know, but apparently in Laurie's bedroom there's a painting by James Ensor, who was a kind of I think he's a Belgian.
Yes, I'm familiar with his work, yes.
Oh, yeah, yes, good. So, yes. He's a Belgian expressionist painter who used to portray human figures wearing grotesque masks. So as you knew that, Eric, didn't you? And you
made
it in fine art. And these are all kind of gleaned from IMDb, so whether or not they're all true, I don't know. But Haddonfield, Illinois is Deborah Hill's hometown was Haddonfield, New Jersey. So it's got lots of not exactly in jokes, but and certainly the character Michael Myers, I think, was he was the name of the British businessman, I think, who helped John Carpenter in when Assault and Precinct 13 was released in the UK, because I think Assault on Precinct 13 was appreciated in Britain a lot more than the States.
Yeah, I think what he did was he pushed it into the London Film Festival that year, and it sort of went down a storm, and sort of things snowballed from there.
Yes, yes. Mm. And of course, probably the most famous aspect or famous kind of tidbit, I kind of guess, is the Michael Myers mask, which, of course... most people will know that it's a William Shatner mask with the eye holes cut out. I just wonder if anyone ever asked William Shatner about it, because I've never heard if William Shatner liked the fact that he's Michael Myers is probably more famous than William Shatner is now.
If you watch, I can't remember which documentary it was, if it was 25 Years of Terror, they show you what the original... Captain Kirk mask looked like, and it looked nothing like William Shatner and was actually really grotesque. And I think the modifications they made to make it into the shape mask, you know, are much more aesthetically pleasing.
Well, it was almost a clown mask, wasn't it? That was the other choice. Which would have been interesting, wouldn't it? I don't know.
It might have worked.
Yeah, because I think the other thing that's kind of scary about Halloween, I was watching it again and trying to think of fresh things about it, and I was trying to, as you know, we said, and like Joseph was saying as well, that it's kind of difficult for it not to be diluted after watching it so many times, is that whole idea that the whole film, obviously, not that it wouldn't have worked at Halloween, but the Michael Myers character wouldn't have worked at any other time of year, because he gets away with being basically wearing a costume, but he's invisible because he's wearing it at Halloween, isn't he? So a man walking around the streets in a white mask, in a boiler suit, at any other time of year would have raised suspicion. But because it was Halloween, nobody gives him a second glance, do they? Mm. Because he must have driven past people. There's a scene, isn't there, when Dr. Loomis is talking to the sheriff and Michael Myers drives past him, doesn't he?
It's kind of comical, really.
And you're kind of thinking, anyone driving past would have looked over and seen this kind of white mask and just presumed it was teenagers fooling around. Mm. So I think that's is kind of how the kind of weird things, how weirdness becomes invisible because of the time of year.
But what I've always wondered, Justin, is the Michael Myers mask, why would it have been on sale in like shops? Because it's a nothing mask. It's not something a kid would want to wear. It's kind of this expressionless face mask. Why? Who would produce it?
Mm.
Has anyone else ever wondered that?
No, but it's also, it's kind of, I mean, it doesn't...
I know, it's really, really effective, but just, I wonder, like, you know, why would it be on sale? Who would be manufacturing a mask that has, you know, no sort of...
Probably Shatco.
Well, they sold several copies of it because Ben Tramer's wearing it in part two.
Exactly, and that's an issue we're going to get onto in Halloween 2, yeah.
And, I mean... Obviously, again, something we've talked about before is the opening shot of the film is probably the most famous shot in the film, of the tracking shot around the house and up through the house, the point of view, and all of that. And of course, it's well known that it's Deborah Hill's hands, isn't it, as playing the killer, and certainly Dario Argento's famous for playing his hands being the hands of the killer in most of his films. The one tracking shot is actually kind of three shots, isn't it, cut together very, very cleverly. And I think if you watch it, knowing that, you can see where the cuts are, like when the mask is picked up and put over to the camera. But again, it's something I said before, that it's very, very similar to the opening shot of 1971, I think it's movie Blood and Lace with Gloria Graham. And again, I can't overstate it, that Halloween, although it is the perfect horror movie, in my opinion, is not a particularly original film. You know, Carpenter took, and Deborah Hill took elements from their favourite horror movies and urban legends and mythology and everything from the past. Well, from all the horror films they'd seen growing up. And in fact, obviously the whole thing with them watching Thing from Another Planet, which obviously points to Carpenter remaking the thing a couple of years, 4 years later, shows it's almost not exactly an in joke, but it shows, I think, Carpenter is quite aware of his debt to the films that have gone before. But I think with John Carpenter, from my understanding of it, and probably with Jamie Lee Curtis as well, is that they've talked about this film so many times that they can't bring themselves to talk about it anymore, which I think we'll come on to Halloween 2 very shortly. But certainly in the the fantastic Shout Factory Shriek and Blu-ray release, obviously John Carpenter and Jamie Lee Curtis weren't involved with that, but I can't imagine for a minute they weren't asked. But certainly I think they probably have talked to death literally about this film. But I get the impression that John Carpenter was has become a little bit humorless about this film, and it's almost he doesn't seem to give nods to any more to the inspirations, although they're obviously fairly obvious. And obviously one of the biggest inspirations, again, was Black Christmas. But one of the famous stories about that is that Bob Clark had written a treatment for a sequel to Black Christmas called Halloween in 1975, where the killer from Black Christmas would return on Halloween and stalk another house full of sorority girls. And he was working with John Carpenter at the time, and John Carpenter obviously soaked that up. And I think John Carpenter, in a lot of ways, is kind of like a sponge, and he kind of soaks up a lot of influences and then produces, or at least at the time, produces some fantastic movies. And unfortunately, John Carpenter, I mean, what is John Carpenter up to now? Do we know?
He's like Argento in that, in my opinion, I think his output has seriously dwindled in quality.
Yeah.
I don't think it's as dropped in quality as severely as Argento's, but it has definitely dropped. I mean, I don't. His last really, really good film for me was Prince of Darkness, I'd say.
Yeah,
and even that was slated by a lot of people. I happen to like it.
Yeah, it's a film I liked.
Did he direct In the Mouth of Madness, or was that Clive Barker?
He did. No, that was him. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, I like that one. I think that was his last decent.
Yeah, I quite like it. No, I thought that was decent, but the last one I really loved was Prince of Darkness, which is 1987 now, so 25 years ago.
Sure. It's kind of whether or not he's... I mean, we've spoken about this before, haven't we? But this idea of whether or not men in their, you know, 60s, 70s will still have the kind of the... you know, the kind of the drive of younger directors. And certainly Wes Craven is kind of coasting, isn't he?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. You know. So, and Dario Argento is kind of not exactly coasting as more of nosediving, I would say. But it'd be interesting to see how much of a shambles Dracula 3D is. But at least
this surprise film I'm going to tonight. You know, one of the rumors going around Dublin is that it may be Dracula 3D.
I wouldn't be at all surprised. It'd be interesting. Let us know what it's like.
Yeah.
Is it set up for 3D? Where you're?
No. There's two screens in this cinema. It's mainly an art house cinema during the year, so their big screen one isn't set up for 3D. So if they are going to show it, it'll be a 2D presentation, which is what Silent Hill Revelation was on Friday night. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. What's the point then?
I think I don't think they would do that. My money is on it being the remake of Maniac, which apparently is supposed to be really, really good.
Mm. Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard some good things about that, so I'm kind of curious about that.
Well, I've heard mixed things about it. I've heard it is kind of quite disturbing and quite difficult to watch.
Mm.
Which, again, if that was the case, it's certainly not a Disneyfied sort of version of Maniac. But I find the original Maniac a little bit difficult to watch personally. You report back, Eric.
I will indeed. Yes,
Eric is going to a showdown.
He's going to a showdown. Well, do we? Is there anything else we want to say about Halloween? Because to be honest, we could talk about Halloween forever, couldn't we? It's a film that we could.
Just one more thing I want to say. I've knocked Jamie Lee Curtis enough, so I'm going to actually give her just due. When you juxtapose her next to the one in the Rob Zombie remake, I mean, anyone who would prefer the girl in the remake is out of their mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the huge problems.
She's so unlikable. She's so unlikable, especially in Halloween 2, the Rob Zombie Halloween 2.
That's what I've never understood about the Rob Zombie. Yeah. I just can't understand why they made Laurie so unlikable in the remake and its sequel. It's just...
Yeah, I don't get it. Because she's just kind of a personable, kind of a normal high school girl in the original film.
And can I ask you a quick question, Joseph, as our booby correspondent?
Yes, the only one.
Yes, in Trading Places, where she takes her top off. Did you not even like her then? No.
No, I think she's an attractive woman. I think she looked the best in True Lies with Arnold Schwarzenegger when she was doing the dance.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just like to make fun of her. I think it's fun.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad that you do.
She is an attractive. Well, not so much now. She's kind of she's getting up there in years, but in her day, she was really, you know, she was a knockout.
Oh, well, I'm glad.
The thing that Jamie Lee Curtis brings to these films is that likability, isn't it? That, you know, she's so personable and very relatable.
I've heard stories that she can be kind of snappy if you catch her on the wrong day, sort of like Linda Blair.
Well, that goes for a lot of people.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I've heard that as well.
Everyone's human, even if you are a celebrity.
Mm. I mean, if you read, because David Groves,
isn't it?
And you kind of read that. I mean, Jamie Lee Curtis, I don't think she's got a troubled relationship with the Halloween films, isn't she? I mean, she was it was her idea to do Halloween H2O, wasn't it? So it's not that she hates these films, and I think she said that she would always be grateful to the Halloween film, well, to the original, for starting a career, and that's the reason she did Halloween 2, because she felt indebted to John Carpenter.
She was coerced into doing the last one, was it Halloween Resurrection, because it was like contract or something, wasn't it?
Well, I think, yeah. Wasn't it? I mean, whether or not it's true, but I mean, she kind of, I think she just maybe naively thought, how can I make another one after I chopped his head off in H2O? But it's kind of like anyone who's watched any kind of horror movie, especially, you know, like a long running horror franchise, will know that just chopping the villain's head off is not enough to stop a franchise from continuing. So I don't know. I don't know whether or not, you know, she's the one who knows whether that's the case. But you kind of get the impression. She certainly wasn't a fan of horror movies, was she? She's not a
I don't know if it was she's done it already or if she's going to do it, but she's making her first and last convention appearance at was it Horror Hound, I think it was, in Indiana. I don't know if it's already happened or if it's going to happen, but I saw that on one of the horror websites, and I saw it on Facebook, and I was like, well, you know, it was a while back, and I was like, well, I'm not too far from Indiana. I would really like to go to meet her, but I think it's already happened.
Oh, is it?
Let me see. Horror Hound Weekend, 16th to the 18th of November. Yeah, with Jamie Burgess.
It has.
So, yeah. So it's another, what, 3 weeks away? 2 weeks away?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I probably won't get to make it, but it's apparently this is going to be her first and last convention appearance. So. Yeah.
They have a suffix of it. Is it the night she came home?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, they're probably, you know, if she's heard this show, which is highly unlikely, then Jamie Lill probably hunt you down, Joseph.
She's listening to everyone just to see if I'll make like horse jokes.
And just to let you know, Joseph, the only way to obtain Jamie Lee Curtis's autograph will be via prepaid autograph vouchers, which will be sold online at www.horrorhound.com prior to the event.
Really?
Yep.
Wow, that's just kind of. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's probably because there's going to be like a billion people there to see her, so they're trying to have some control there. Yeah. Plus, it would kind of suck to be in line and get cut off like BTK did that one year to meet Robert Englund.
Yeah. Poor BTK, David, the guy that posts on the Body Count Continues. He stood in line to meet Robert Englund, and he got to the very front, and then Robert Englund had to leave.
Oh, really?
Oh.
He didn't get to meet him. He was mad.
That happened.
Well, what's funny is that night in the bar, Robert Englund was like 1 foot away from me, just standing at the bar. I'm like, why doesn't he just go over and say hi? He's saying hi to everyone else. I don't think he would care.
When I was watching Silent Hill Revelation last on Friday night, I was 3 seats away from Danielle Harris.
Yes. And did her eyebrows move?
Yeah, what is that about her eyebrows? Anita was saying something about her eyebrows, and I don't understand.
She really only like 2 foot tall.
She's tiny, yeah. Yeah, and she was drinking a Bailey's and tonic water, which was an unusual combination.
What mixed together?
Yeah.
So there's no alcohol?
Well, no, there is alcohol in Bailey's, but she was just watering it down with tonic water, I suppose.
Probably wouldn't survive Grabbers then.
No,
she'd have a little bit of alcohol in her, but not enough.
Indeed.
Of course, she probably has to, because since she's so small, she can have one shot and be, you know, plastered.
Yeah.
Her directorial debut was on last night. I didn't go to it because I was studying for the podcast. Among Friends, it's called. And apparently it went down quite well.
It's a horror film. Mm-hmm.
I think it's kind of like, is it Very Bad Things, that film is called?
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
With Christian
Slater. It's kind of like a dinner party that somebody gets killed at, and then, you know, mayhem ensues or something.
Okay. Oh, that sounds good. That sounds good.
I like that better when it was called Stag.
Oh. Nice.
There's a movie called Stag that came out before Very Bad Things. It's basically the exact same movie, but I think it was better. But anyway, that's off topic.
Yeah.
Can I just tell you one other quick thing about the stuff I got off IMDb? And as we said before, IMDb is notorious for, because I mean, anyone can write on it. But I've just seen this thing with this kind of it. All the people who were considered for the role of Dr. Sam Loomis.
I saw that. Yeah.
Did you see that? And it's kind of Peter O'Toole, Kirk Douglas, Lloyd Bridges, Chris Christopherson, David Carradine, Dennis Hopper, Charles Napier. But then it starts getting a bit kind of surreal. It's like Yul Brynner, John Belushi, and Mel Brooks. Now, can you imagine Mel Brooks chasing?
Do you know who would have made a great Dr. Loomis?
Not Stefani Estella.
Mel Brooks with his
Bob Hoskins would have.
Bob Hoskins.
Well, he's the same shape as Donald Pleasance.
Well, exactly.
He's the shape.
Yeah.
He's a bit more portly, though, isn't he?
He would have made a good Laurie Strode. He would have made a good Annie. He would have made a good Sheriff Brackett.
Do you know that Bob Hoskins just had a birthday?
Yep.
71.
Of course I do.
But I'll tell you what he could have done. When Michael Myers was shot and fell from the balcony, if it Bob Hoskins, he could have jumped over and belly flopped on top of him and moving. See, that would have stopped it all in the water, wouldn't it?
You would have. So,
hey, I'm Roger Rabbit. Whatever his name is.
Right, well, we're doing both movies, because obviously Halloween, it's more of the night he came home. Are we going to, obviously we can talk a bit more about Halloween, but do you think it's time we should move on? Nathan, is there anything else you want to say at this juncture?
You don't know what death is.
Indeed. And shall we progress? Eric, are you ready to lead us into more of the night he came home after the trailer?
As it's been sprung on me in the last 10 minutes, I am.
It has not been sprung on you, Eric.
I made that mention. I said, you asked me if I wanted to lead it on Halloween 2. I said, well, I think Eric has seen the movie more than I have, so he should do it. And then Eric said, okay.
Exactly. I have no recollection of this conversation.
And then he took his top off and flashed his tits. His tits.
At the 70 seconds.
Yeah, I think this was a dream.
No, that way you would remember, because you always forget.
Yes. Okay, well, here's the trailer for 1981's Halloween 2.
I shot him 6 times. I shot him in the heart. The man he's not human.
Universal Pictures presents Halloween 2. More of the night he came home.
Within him, neither conscience nor reason that wasn't even remotely human.
This is some kind of a joke. I've been trick or treated to death tonight.
We don't know what death is.
Janet, go tell Mr. Garrett we're having trouble with the phones.
There is no place to hide. He will always find you.
What's this?
It's a Celtic word. It means the Lord of the Dead.
Okay, that was the trailer for Halloween 2, 1981. Picking up exactly where the first film left off, this time Laurie Strode is taken to the rather empty Haddonfield Memorial Clinic. The Shape hears the news of where Laurie is located on a broadcast on the radio, and he makes his way there to continue his terror campaign against the sort of nerdy young girl, but also against the staff of the sparsely populated hospital. Now, as I said earlier, Halloween 2 was the first entry in the franchise that I saw. It was on Irish television on Halloween night 1985. I remember it being the most terrifying experience of my life. The scares were just so effective. I was 11 years old at the time. Oddly enough, when I was in school the next day, all anyone could talk about were Pamela Susan Shoup's boobs. Surprisingly, that wasn't the topic of conversation for me. I was more interested in Michael Myers and the scares involved in the film. I think, certainly in terms of scares, it matches the original. It manages to capture the same look and feel, has the same scope as the film. One of the things I think is superior to the original is the opening credit sequence and the new, improved theme music. I like sort of the epic feel of the synthesized score. I love the way in the opening credits the pumpkin imagery, the pumpkin splits apart to reveal a skull. I thought that was really, really creepy. There are problems with the film, problems that didn't occur to me when I used to watch it as a teenager, but problems that are very apparent to me now watching it again. I'll get onto them in a second, but I do think the film, certainly at the time, was underrated. It got absolutely slagged off by everyone at the time. I think it manages to have the same amount of tension and suspense as the original, whilst also adding in the sort of gore and creative murders that people had come to expect in the wake of Friday the 13th. I think all its failings are script-based, and that has to land at the feet of John Carpenter and Deborah Hill. I mean, they're the first to kind of slag off the film, but I think they created all the problems with the film. You have to suspend disbelief a lot to believe that this hospital is so deserted. It's, such a huge building with only maybe 7 or 8 people manning it. You have to believe that this teenage girl can manage to fire bullets into both eyes of the killer, in the film's climax. As we mentioned earlier, Ben Tramer just happens to have the exact same mask and overall combo as Michael Myers for some bizarre reason. Also, another laughable element that didn't bother me when I was young, but now I just cringe when I see it, is when Michael Myers falls off the balcony at the start and he leaves a perfect human print on the lawn. It's just pathetic. It's like, why did they do that? I mean, I'd say 90% of the film to me is a perfect slasher movie, but are these slight elements thrown in that kind of ruin the tension for me, and that's one of them. Another one, of course, is Jamie Lee Curtis's wig. I mean, obviously they had to go that route because the film picks up the exact moment the first one leaves off, and Jamie Lee Curtis had her short haircut at this time. And again, that was something that I didn't even notice when I used to watch it years ago, but now I find it quite distracting. Apart from all those sort of unbelievable elements, I think one of the most believable elements in the film that works against the film, really, on a grand scale, is the fact that they sedate Laurie Strode for much of the film. Now, it's a believable plot point, but it means that you have, Laurie Strode she's out of the film. I mean, I think I read on some sites that she's only in the film for about 20 minutes, which is a shame because, she's one of the great selling points for these films, all the films she's in. I think she's a terrific actress, regardless of what Joseph says. But I do think, certainly when I saw Halloween 2 back in the 80s, I saw it as the perfect film. It was my favorite film of all time, and nothing lived up to it. And as Justin was saying, I may have watched it a few too many times because its effectiveness has kind of worn off on me, I think. And I begin to see the flaws in it. I still think, though, that it's a great sequel to a great film. I think people were quite harsh on it at the time. Justin, I'll go to you first. I know you were in the same situation as me. You saw this before the original, as you were saying. Mm.
Mm. I think it's difficult, isn't it? Because I have seen this so many times. And having said that, with the music, it's still, when that music kicks in, it still kind of gives me chills. And I think the film has, it's still very, very, very effective. I mean, a hospital is a great setting, but I agree with all of the pluses and negatives you've mentioned. I think Jamie Lee Curtis is wasted in this. And I think Jamie Lee Curtis, I think I'm right in saying herself, was a bit perplexed. She'd actually agreed to come back to do this film, and this was the last, I think this, she made this, didn't she, just before Road Games, or was it, but it's basically the last of her slasher movies before, she returned to it with Halloween H2O, and she only really did it as a favour. She'd already kind of was wanting to move away from this kind of Scream Queen sort of title she had, and she wanted to, branch out. And so the fact is they got her back in, and then they kind of wasted her for a lot of the film. It was a strange idea. And certainly with Rick Rosenthal, the director, I mean, I understand that John Carpenter saw a film, which I've never seen. I don't know if any of you seen The Toya.
No, I've seen Toya, yeah.
Not Toya, but wasn't it called The Toya?
It was called the Toyer, yeah.
Yes.
T-O-Y-E-R, in case people can't get past your accent.
Yes, but not as in T-O-Y-A-H.
A-H, no.
As in Toyer Wilcox. Although, wouldn't that have been funny if you'd done a video about Toyer? But anyway, so... Mm-hmm. It, obviously, that was impressed John Carpenter enough to want to give him the directing gig on Halloween 2. And obviously, John Carpenter had turned it down, but contractually, him and Deborah Hill were obliged to provide a script for the film, which is what they did, and slightly half-heartedly, obviously. But I think, from my understanding, and I haven't listened to the commentary on the Halloween 2, although I hear it is a little bit dull, the commentary by the director on the new Blu-ray, is that he was a bit put out that he'd basically been told to do a continuation of the look and the feel of Halloween. But John Carpenter is actually also a consummate businessman and realised that the horror landscape had changed quite remarkably in the 3 years since Halloween had come out. So we can talk a little bit more about that in a bit, but Halloween 2 still works very, very well for me. I mean, lots of it work. I mean, stuff like the security guard going to, and a cat jumping out, I mean, is just lazy, you know, it's kind of lazy filmmaking, but no more lazy than you could say the exactly same scene happening in Friday the 13th Part 2 from the same year. But it still has an effectiveness, and that prowling around Haddonfield at the beginning, especially when the girl is on her phone to her friend and Michael Myers is outside, and the scene where Michael Myers goes into the neighbor's kitchen when the woman's making a sandwich, stuff like that kind of still works really, really well. And certainly the ending bits of the film, I think, with Jamie Lee Curtis, when finally everything kicks into gear and Michael Myers is walking down the stairs in like a slow, methodical way and walking towards Jamie Lee Curtis in the lift, and the doors are closing slowly and she just gets away, things like that still work very, very well. You know, the ending, it's still better than most slasher movies of the time. I think, as much as I love most slasher movies of the time, I still think it still stands up. But it's not the perfect film like Halloween is, but there's I would say it's as good an example of a slasher movie from 1981 as anything else released that year, I would say. And it's a strong contender for being a better movie than Friday the 13th Part 2, I think. So, So yeah.
Actually, on one of the one of the DVD extras I watched, Deborah Hill admitted she says they were halfway through filming and they realized that they'd made a big mistake in having Jamie Lee Curtis's character comatose or drugged for most of the film, but it was too late to go back. So, you know, even early on, they acknowledged that was kind of a mistake. Nathan, your thoughts on Halloween 2?
I love Halloween 2. I love any horror movie set at a hospital to begin with. A few points I wanted to bring up is, number one, I love the touch of the little kid with the razor blade. Thought that was an interesting touch, you know, to kind of just throw that in. I also think it's really funny how nonchalant the girl in the beginning is when she says, "Oh, my neighbors, his wife's always picking at him. I guess he got tired of it and just decided to start beating her." I mean, like, it's okay to do that, you know. No big deal. Michael was holding Pamela Susan Shoup's character under that really hot water. Did it not hurt his hand?
No. Well, if bullets aren't going to hurt him, you know, boiling water certainly isn't.
Well, the bullet slowed him down for, like, 5 seconds.
Yeah. But you can see when he has his eyes shot out. So,
yeah, and then he could see in the later sequels. Yeah. He's very resilient.
Very resilient.
But no, I mean, I love the... I'm like Eric. I prefer the music in the sequel. You know, I love the... you know, just the way they switched it up just a little bit, but still maintained, like, the... You know, pretty much the way the soundtrack is for the original, they just kind of added that little bit to it. But I like what they did with it. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I love the shots of, you know, Michael Myers just walking down the stairs in the hospital and, like, the scenes of, like, somebody walking down the hall and passing a doorway that's, like, barely closing.
Mm-hmm.
So... I mean, I love it. It's a good movie.
Mm. There are lots of those scenes, like as in the original, where you see Michael Myers loitering in the background. You like when Karen and Mrs. Alves are, you know, she's giving out to her for arriving late, and you can see Michael Myers hanging around in the background in the whatever, the kiddie ward thing. Mm.
What was y'all's opinion of Mrs. Alves? Do y'all think she's a bitch, or do you think that she just, you know, really cared about the hospital and wanted to make sure the employees were good?
I think she cared a lot about her job. I don't feel she was a nasty character.
I don't either.
Mm. No.
Again, I find myself defending her a lot when I watch this movie with people.
Yeah. Mm. Well, the thing is, she's got like quite a lot of annoying staff, isn't she? Do you know what I mean? It's, you've got,
yeah, because I love the character of is it Janet, played by Anna Alicia, where Mrs. Alves asks her to go get Mr. Garrett or something, and she's like, but he's at the other end of the hall. I mean, how long is this hall that she's so miffed she has to walk down to the end of?
I know.
My God, she's lazier than me.
But also, it's kind of, you've got this hospital, and you've touched on it about it being empty, but you've got a hospital with one patient, Jamie Lee Curtis, and about 40 babies. And that's a very strange hospital, isn't it?
I know. Yep, very strange.
Mm.
Joseph, your thoughts on Halloween 2, please.
Well, I think Halloween 2 is a sloppier film than Halloween. Actually, I would call Halloween 2...
Okay, that's enough from you. Go away.
I would call Halloween 2 a movie and Halloween a film, but I think as a movie, Halloween 2 is really good. I think it's really well made. I pretty much agree with everything you guys have said. I think there's parts that are kind of, you know, choppy, but as a slasher film, it works because I love the hospital setting. I think more slasher films need to be set in a hospital. There's not nearly enough. And I like a lot of the little side characters that you kind of get introduced to, like Bud and all those people, the little weirdos that work in the hospital. And I don't know, it's like an empty hospital, like you said. It's like there's no one there. And I guess that kind of adds to the whole the isolation that I guess Laurie is supposed to be in, even though she's sedated through most of the film. Mm. The one thing that I did like a lot better in Halloween 2 than I did in the original Halloween. Aside from the, you know, amped up body count, I think I like the ending better of Halloween 2, where he's in the room and he gets his eyes shot out and he's just kind of wildly swinging the knife at Laurie and Dr. Loomis. And then, you know, he gets Laurie out of the room and he's got the gas and he's like, it's time, Michael. Then he just blows the whole thing up. I really love that ending. I think it's just, you know, it's explosive to... No pun intended or anything like that, but Halloween 2, I mean, it's a lot like Halloween. It's been dissected to death, so there's really not much I can say about it except that, yeah, I do like it. Now, who was – I think it might have been you, Eric, who said it is a contender for being better than Friday the 13th Part 2. I would disagree there, I think.
Just me. That was me.
Okay, yeah, I would disagree there. I think Friday the 13th 2 is leaps and bounds beyond Halloween 2, but it's still – I think Halloween 2 is a very excellent film.
Well, I'd probably agree with you, Justin. I think Halloween 2 is probably that bit better than Friday the 13th Part 2.
Maybe I agree with Joseph.
Oh, well, there we go.
2v2.
Split down the middle. I mean, Friday the 13th Part 2 is fantastic, but it has its flaws. You know, whereas
there are no flaws.
What, in Friday the 13th Part 2?
Yeah.
The only flaw is the confusing dream sequence in the beginning. That's the only flaw.
Yes, of course.
Mm. I knew that was coming.
Yeah.
Mm.
But I mean, the thing is, again, it's kind of, I mean, yeah, it's, what can you say? I mean, the thing is, it's comparing two gems, and I think they're both flawed movies. But I mean, sequels are usually flawed, aren't they? I mean, usually, I mean, this is that the problem with Halloween 2 partly is that why it's always going to be, you know, be kind of negative, be a negative when you look at it to the first. One is the beauty of Halloween is it's the beauty of it is it's how slender it is. There's no storyline fat. There's barely a plot, is there? It's all about the visuals and this kind of whisper, whisper of a plot. Whereas with Halloween 2, John Carpenter famously came up the sister angle because you know, he sat there with a six pack of beer and he couldn't think of anything else. And in some ways, that's quite a cynical you know, approached by him. You know, I mean, I'm sure we've all been there when we've had to do jobs we don't really want to have to do, so we put as little effort into as possible. And I think that does shine through in Halloween 2 to some degree. But what could he do? What could he do in Halloween 2? Could it just carry on with Michael Myers, you know, pursuing Laurie Strode for no reason? Would that have worked? Arguably, it would have done. But he needed that plot device to get Dr. Loomis to the hospital, didn't he? For the end of the film. So I don't know. But again, I think that
as a plot device, it's okay. But it's a good reason to get him there. But at the same time, it does kill that kind of mystique of him just being that, you know, silent psycho. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword. It works, and yet it doesn't work.
Yeah. I mean, Eric, I mean, what else do you want to say about Halloween 2?
Well, one of the things I wanted to say was that Sheriff Brackett says at one stage, no man can take 6 sluts. And I was thinking, I'm sure Joseph could. No? No? Joseph?
I said,
Sheriff Brackett says at one stage, no man can take 6 sluts. And I thought to myself, Joseph could.
6 sluts?
Yeah.
I thought he said slugs.
Yeah. Oh, did he say slugs? I thought he said 6 sluts.
Slugs are like bullets.
Oh, yeah.
Slut.
Okay,
it's a term for bullets.
Okay.
You're just calling me a man whore for no reason. Why would you do that?
Because I'm evil.
You are evil. Yeah. You've got the blackest eyes.
Yeah. I have the devil's
eyes. He didn't say he'd take 6 Bob Hoskins.
I wish.
No man could take 6 Bob
Hoskins. Actually, one of the things I noticed about Halloween and Halloween 2 is illegal parking. Does anyone else notice this?
Illegal parking?
Yeah. In Halloween 1, when he's at the hospital saying somebody must have been giving him driving lessons, Sam Loomis is parked in the disabled parking space. In Halloween 2, Karen, when she's running late, she pulls up and parks in visitor parking only, it says on the sign.
Eric, well, I think you've watched these films far too many times.
I have seen these films far too many times. But yeah, I think there's an illegal parking thread going through the series. No? Well, anyone else notice that?
Well,
speaking of... you were saying that, you know, John Carpenter's script and Deborah Hill's script to this film sort of, you know, as contractual obligation. That's very true. If you watch the documentary on the new Scream Factory Blu-ray, they say that, you know, John Carpenter had originally agreed with Irwin Yablans, who produced Halloween, to produce The Fog. Then all of a sudden, John Carpenter had teamed up with Avco Embassy to produce The Fog. So Irwin Yablans was miffed and sued them. And part of the settlement was that John Carpenter had to agree to do Halloween 2. So it was very much a contractual, it was a legal obligation for him to do Halloween 2, which is probably why there's so little care has been put into the script.
Do you feel sorry? I mean, the thing is, I do feel sorry for Rick Rosenthal, obviously.
Because I think, like John Carpenter and Deborah Hill have slagged off Halloween 2. And I think the problems with it, as I said, are all script-based, which is their fault. I don't think there's any problem with the execution of the script. I think the direction is very solid. I think it is too.
But then would it be a solid without... Because obviously, Carpenter said he'd watched the rough cut and said it was as scary as Quincy, which, if you don't know, is Quincy is kind of like an anodyne sort of 80s kind of...
Detective show.
Detective show, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so... But there were 3 days of reshoots, wasn't there? And one of them was, I believe, is the kill with the girl on the phone.
Yeah, Alice. At the beginning. Yeah.
And the scene of the boy carrying the boombox, which gives a kind of hook of, you know, I'm not sure what the others were, because obviously we're going to come onto the TV cut shortly.
Yeah.
But that
kid with the boombox was Dick Warlock's son, Lance.
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean. I've read somewhere they said it was the TV cut was more akin to Rosenthal's original idea for the film. But having said that, a lot of the scenes that were added, I mean, the more gory scenes, presumably, again, I don't know whether or not there were reshoots of the death scenes to gore them up. But presumably, that's that's what certainly what I've read is Carpenter, with an eye on the success of Friday 13th, presumably, and that was the reason why he decided, as and again this is kind of business decision, that the film needed to be more like a Friday 13th film than it did like his original Halloween, and that's why the film got into a bit of a mess, I kind of guess. But having said that, again, that's why it's such a good example of a slash movie from 1981, isn't it? Arguably,
Carpenter has no room to slag off that film. He did Memoirs of an Invisible Man,
which I didn't mind that film. Actually,
you do.
I don't mind. I mean, I don't like it, but I don't mind it. I think his.
I don't think it's terrible, but I think Chevy Chase was severely miscast. I think he was.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
idea is a good one.
Yeah. On the subject of the TV edit of Halloween 2, it comes as an extra disc, a bonus disc with the Scream Factory Blu-ray. Mm. And it was my first time seeing the TV edit, because anytime it's been screened over here, it's been the theatrical cut. Mm. And, you know, normally the TV edit is just moments of violence removed and maybe swear words overdubbed. But in the case of Halloween 2, the film has been completely re-edited. Like, to a large extent, I think somebody has posted it on the internet somewhere. There are 80 differences between the TV version and the theatrical version. One of them is, of course, as I said, overdubbing bad language. Justin, I think you have a clip there that can demonstrate just how terribly this is done.
Oh, yes. And where are we? It is...
What did she see?
You know the shopping bag out by the mall? Well, she stopped at a light. And saw him walking in that field behind the Lost River Diving. Julie said he was so creepy.
Julie's full of sugar. Didn't escape from the last night. Damn.
Well, you don't have to swear, but...
Well, she's a damn moron anyway.
Every other word you say is either hell or damn.
Sorry. I guess I just foul up all the time.
I mean, they don't even...
Sugar.
Yeah, I guess I just foul up all the time. And it doesn't even sound like the original actor's voice or anything, and that permeates throughout the film. But what's interesting as well is that for a lot of innocuous scenes, they use different takes. Like for the scene after Ben Tramer is killed by the car and the explosion, when the deputy gets out of the car and says they found three bodies, you know, in a house, and one of them was Annie. They use a different take for that, and I don't understand why... the music is all over the place. They use the sort of John Carpenter sting effects, like bing. They use them in real innocuous points where there's nothing happening. There's that scene where he walks into the Elrod house and steals the knife. The scene where Mrs. Elrod turns around and screams. They cut to a still frame image of Michael Myers from later in the film when he's in the therapy the hydrotherapy room, and it just looks ridiculous. I mean, it's an absolute hoosh to watch because. You know, it's been edited by Helen Keller, it seems. Yeah.
I mean, too soon.
Too soon. What, 100 years later?
Yes.
Oh, Joseph. But there's also the scene, they completely cut out the death scene of, what's the name of the nurse who gets the needle through her head?
Oh, Janet, yeah. Janet and Dr. Mixter are never seen. That scene's cut out. There's also the death of Mrs. Alves is cut and of...
Yeah.
Jimmy slipping in the pool of blood is cut into this climax where the explosion goes off. You see Jimmy slipping in the pool of blood as if the explosion has forced him to sort of slip.
But it's bizarre, isn't it? But actually, just an aside, in the documentary on Halloween 2 on the new Blu-ray, I mean, that the woman who played Janet doesn't look like she's aged a day, does she?
She looks fantastic, yeah.
Even it's like 31 years later.
I'd say Nathan's probably a big fan of her because she was a regular in Falcon Crest.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I love Anna Alicia.
Yeah. Joe, I think one of the great additions to the TV edit is that after... they sedate Laurie for the first time when she comes to the hospital, and they they put her to sleep. It cuts to a bit of dialogue, like she falls asleep, and then Mrs. Alves says, "Okay, let's get her clothes off," and she says it in such a gleeful way, as if they're going to have some fun with Laurie while she's sedated. It's just absolutely hilarious.
We have spoken about this before, but the part of the reason you can see they may have taken some of those scenes out was actually some of the acting from Jamie Lee Curtis wasn't that great, was it, some of the scenes that are added back in for the TV version. There's another scene, isn't there, where she gets sedated again, doesn't she, where she's struggling, and it's not you know, it's not great. And also there's a scene where she's on the phone, isn't she? And she says something like,
"Oh, mama. Oh, mama.
She's like Carrie or something. She puts on this sort of southern accent.
Yeah. And so you can see why some of those bits were kind of cut out by... But what would have been... I mean, it was great that they put that on because I think it was really good. But I would have been, out of interest, would have been interesting to see Rick Rosenthal's original cut. If such a thing existed, because presumably, maybe it is locked away somewhere. And just out of interest, it would have been interesting to have seen it. Because presumably, if John Carpenter came in and reshot scenes of violence, then there would have been different takes on the death scenes of some of the other characters. Presumably, unless of course in the original cut, Janet, you never saw what happened to Janet. Perhaps I don't know. Because it seems a bit arbitrary, wasn't it, for the doctor, the drunk doctor, to be found with a syringe sticking out of his eye, but that has one of the all time great Michael Myers appearing scenes, isn't it? As he kind of comes into focus, so his face looms in behind Janet in the doctor's office, like it does in the original film, because at the top of the stairs, which I think is kind of that whole floating jack o' lantern type thing.
What was that noise?
Yeah, what was that?
The animals here are having a great time chasing one another.
Oh, right. It wasn't Argento going to the lavatory again, was it?
And Jovi the dog is like, I guess she's getting irritated because Callie the cat keeps attacking her.
Okay. It's like a children's TV show.
That's all we need now. It's like...
Well, have we got any background on the film? Anything else we want to say that we haven't already covered? I mean, one of the things I did see was that the girl, because famously, I keep on saying famously, but you know, when they were making Halloween 2, they brought back Annie and Linda, didn't? When they brought back Annie and Jamie for the TV scenes for Halloween, didn't they? They filmed those while they were making this. And Annie, the woman, Nancy Kiles or Nancy Loomis, is the voice on the end of the phone to the girl who gets killed near the beginning. Yeah. So it was funny where they kind of they did that. Obviously, this film was made by Universal, wasn't it? It was and also it made part three. And obviously, I don't know. I mean, what were your thoughts about if they'd gone for Michael Myers part three? Because certainly that's the big criticism of part three, isn't it, from most people who didn't realize that it wouldn't have Michael Myers in it.
I was one of them back in the 80s. I rented Halloween 3 expecting Michael Myers.
Would it have been like part four, or would it have been a completely different story?
I think it would have been completely different, because John Carpenter and Deborah Hill were still on board at that stage, so I think it would have been a much better sequel than Halloween 4.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't have had Jamie Lee Curtis in it, presumably. She wouldn't have. I mean, maybe that's one of the reasons why they thought we're not going to get her back for another one. And I think they'd done their damnedest by the end of Halloween 2, shooting out his eyes and setting him on fire, that, you know, they didn't go... They went for that in the television version, and certainly on the documentary, Lance Guest says that the version he saw originally, he was surprised when he watched the theatrical version and realised he didn't live, because he always...
Well, I don't know. When I watched the theatrical version, I always assumed that he probably did live, and that they find him later sort of just unconscious in the car. I assume he just fainted just from concussion in the car.
I suppose it's open to conjecture, but the end of the TV version, isn't it? Obviously, he sits up in a white sheet as that last scare, because you kind of guess you're led to think that it's like a cheap shock at the end, that Michael Myers is going to sit up and kill Jamie Lee Curtis in the ambulance. Obviously, that's not the case, but it would be interesting, because I mean, you've probably heard this as well. I mean, a couple of things that, you know, come to mind was that one of the original ideas was to set it in a tower block, wasn't it, several years after the first film, and so not to be a direct continuation, but for Michael Myers to stalk Jamie Lee Curtis, Laurie Strode, around a tower block. The other thing was that both Halloween and Halloween 2 were considered to be made in 3D. And neither of them were, because of the difficulty of filming that in that process. But I mean, what are your thoughts? Would you think, especially like Halloween 2, would that, you know, do you, that would have worked as a 3D movie?
any film would work as a 3D movie, in my opinion.
I think I think pretty much get away with anything. I mean, the a lot of the death scenes kind of lend themselves to that technology. I mean, if it, I wouldn't want to post convert something like that, but if they shot it in 3D, yeah.
Yeah, I think 3D probably works best with cheesier movies. I don't classify Halloween 2 as a cheesy movie. Mm. Halloween 3 might have worked good in 3D.
Yeah.
Well, I was just thinking about those boobs in 3D would have been...
Whoa!
What,
you're wanting to see those in 3D, Justin?
No, I'm just thinking they would... They would
Bud's be... buttocks in 3D.
Yes. Well, exactly. Anything could have, like, you know, popping out the screen at you. So, But that would, if you imagine, if they filmed it like that, and you had Michael Myers walking down the stairs with a scalpel sticking out the screen and things like that. That would have been quite fun. But yeah, I mean, a little bit about the business. You know, both films made huge amounts of money, and I think obviously Halloween for many years was the highest grossing independent movie of all time. It made something like $70 million on a budget of $340,000. Halloween 2 didn't make nearly that much money, obviously, but I think it was the highest grossing horror movie, was it, of 1981? Or the second highest grossing? It was something. It was certainly. I think it made more money, didn't it, than Friday the 13th Part 2?
Oh, yeah, it did, yeah. Mm.
And so it was a big, you know, success at the cinema. And the artwork for the films, for the posters, the artwork for Halloween was obviously very iconic, wasn't it? With the knife, the kind of the staggering image of the pump of the slash and knife becoming the pumpkin. But in the UK, the poster for Halloween wasn't that. It was a picture of Nancy Loomis in the car being strangled and a hand coming up with the tagline, the trick was to stay alive. Whereas in Halloween 2, it was the fantastic image of the skull and the pumpkin that was used in both the US and the UK. But I notice how across all of them, it's got like the quad I've got, they've all got all new, as if they had to convince audiences they weren't just going to be watching the first film again.
Yeah, I noticed that. I always thought it was quite odd. I mean, they do that on the Halloween 3 poster as well, but it makes sense there because it's a completely different movie.
Yeah, I think it's possibly because back in the days before video, I think films were probably re-released if they were
exactly,
successful relatively regularly at cinemas. I know certain films like Jaws and Rocky Horror Picture Show and things like that were kind of... I mean, they still aren't they?
And Disney's The Love Bug, which my dad took me to about 3 or 4 times over the space of a couple of years.
Okay. Yeah. So maybe, yeah, they were worried people because they say more of the night he came home. But yes, it was spectacularly successful. But again, Halloween 3 wasn't... It bombed, didn't it? It didn't do very well at the cinema at all. And I know... I won't go into the full story, but when I went to see it at the cinema, I was disappointed that it wasn't.
Yeah.
But yeah, that story. But
No, tell us again.
No. But all I was going to say that story, you went to see it and it had been taken off. So back then,
and
you know, now if
you went to see Quest for Fire and
I pulled a man off in the cinema, his wig.
Well, his wig. Yes, you ended up with the man's toupee in your hand.
Yes, I did. Yes, so. Yeah, but so anyway, that was my Halloween story. So I don't think I've never seen a Halloween film on the big screen. I haven't seen any of them because Part 4 I think was the last film that came out at the cinema in the UK. All the rest went straight to video.
7 and 8 came out theatrically.
Oh, of course. Yeah, of course. No, what I'm talking about.
I saw Halloween 6, H2O Resurrection, and Rob Zombie's first remake.
I had to go to England to see. My brother was living in Manchester at the time. It was Halloween 1989 by the time Halloween 4 came over here. So I saw Halloween 4 in the theatres, and I saw H2O, Halloween Resurrection, and then the two Rob Zombie abominations in the cinema. I saw Halloween.
I didn't see the second one. I refused to go to the cinema to see the second one.
Yeah. Part 2 came out actually when I had a monthly pass to the cinema, so I was paying just a monthly rate, and I could go see as many films as I wanted. Otherwise, I probably would have avoided it, to be honest.
I wish we had monthly passes here.
Do you not have them over there, no?
No.
No, I used to pay, about €18 a month, and I could go see as many films as I wanted. But now that I'm living...
Was that in American dollars? What was that like?
It'd be about $12, maybe. $13.
Really?
Yeah. It was the basically it was the price of two film peak time films.
Hmm. And you could go all month whenever you wanted?
Yeah, anytime you wanted, yeah.
It's not fair.
It was really good value if you were living near town, but then I moved really far out of town, so it didn't become that much an appeal for me.
Mm. Oh, well. Yeah, because most movie tickets here are like $10 just for one showing.
Yeah.
Mm. It's really expensive now, isn't it? Really expensive. Yeah. But
so it has to be a movie I really, really want to see before I'll...
Same with me, yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
I did lie, actually. No, because it was... I did see H2O at the cinema. I don't think... I saw... I can't remember if I saw Resurrection...
I saw Resurrection in the cinema, but I think it was literally in and out after 2 weeks.
Maybe I did.
I don't think it lasted that long, to be honest.
No, it didn't last long here at all, because I went and seen it, and the next thing I knew, it was like it was out on video.
Yeah.
No, I think I must have seen it at the cinema, because we talked about Busta Rhymes, didn't we? And
The difference between the DVD version and the theatrical version.
Yeah. But... because certainly with Friday 13th movies, I think after part 6 got a release in the UK on as a double bill with April Fool's Day, but then none of these apart until the remake came out of the cinema.
Yeah.
So
well, Freddy versus Jason, obviously, as well.
Freddy versus Jason. Yeah. But so is there anything else we want to say about Halloween 2?
There's one thing I
just wanted to say. I agree with Bud's theme song.
Amazing Grace.
I want Amazing Grace to sit on my face.
Yeah. And who is
whoever
Amazing
that
Grace?
May be? I don't know who that is.
Grace Zabriskie, whatever her name is.
Oh, then never mind. I thought he just meant like in general. I don't know.
Grace Jones.
Yeah.
See, Bud to me, Bud is the unsung hero of Halloween 2. Much like Billy is the unsung hero of Friday the 13th Part 5.
No,
they're just two party animals who you know who wanted to party and have sex and do drugs, and that's all they wanted to do. And they didn't bother nobody, and they end up getting killed.
And they're both dating girls with big jugs.
Yes, exactly.
But also, he does take the nurse away from all those babies. Mm. What happened if one of those babies had a choking accident or something?
Maybe she had baby fever and he just was like, she's getting ideas in her head, so he's got to kind of persuade her not to get baby fever.
Very possibly.
See, I'm trying to turn this in his favor. I'm trying to make him the unsung hero. Yeah.
Can I just get back to the TV version of Halloween 2 for a second? I was saying earlier that one of the great things about Michael Myers, certainly in the first one, is the fact that he's so casual and doesn't seem to care. In Halloween 2's TV edit, the scene where he comes in and stabs what turns out to be pillows, in the TV version, he just pulls back the blankets and notices the pillows there, and he picks up one of the pillows and throws it away, sort of in a really angry gesture. And I'm really glad that was removed from the theatrical version, because I don't want Michael Myers to display anger. I like the fact that he shows just indifference to everything he does.
Yeah, no, I think it was good that we did both these films, because we could have done a separate show on both the films, really, couldn't we?
Can you guys understand, though, why Halloween 2 got such a negative response from the critics, who were so positive about the first installment? Is it solely down to the ups, you know, ante in the gore department?
I think it's the body count. I mean, a lot of these critics like the, you know, kind of subdued aspect of the original, and then Halloween 2 is more in your face. Let's see how many people we can kill. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that in my eyes, but, you know, a lot of these stuffy critics just didn't particularly care for that aspect.
I mean, I can understand, you know, a critic giving Halloween maybe 3 stars and giving Halloween 2 2 stars, but there was far much more of a gap, you know, than that. Like, they really hated Halloween 2. I don't really understand why. I think it has the scares of the original and the gore of Friday the 13th thrown in as well. So.
But I think that's exactly why they didn't like it, because I think it was, from what I can read, a lot of the film critics by 1981, by the time that came out in, around Halloween 1981, they'd sat through 100 slasher movies, Friday the 13th and Halloween inspired slasher movies, and they were just fed up to the back teeth of them, basically.
See, if I were a critic around 1981, I would have been like joyous, like, to sit through that many movies and get to write about them, and then Halloween 2 come out, I've been like, wow, you know, this one's good as well. 4 stars.
But
or
but we weren't.
If you were living, if you were living in Ireland, it would have been 1982.
Yeah, was it? I think it was similar in the UK.
I think it was released probably around March or April as well, so nowhere near Halloween.
I think, yeah, because in the UK, I can't see from up here, but I think it was June 1982 it came out.
Yeah, it was probably around then as well, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, in 1981, I was just a barefoot boy with cheeked tan.
In 1982, I was 8, and I used.
Whoa. You were
funny noise. Funny noise.
This is Duran Duran singing almost. Like it sounded like.
Reflex.
So what were you doing in 1982?
I was dancing around the living room to Spandau Ballet and Duran Duran, and didn't really have any inkling about what a horror movie was. Or
okay.
Now in 1982, I had my first full time job.
Did you?
No, you didn't.
I worked at the factory.
Yeah, yeah. In 1982, you were about 4. Yes.
Six.
Okay.
I wasn't even born yet.
Justin was about 18. Were you, Justin?
No. 4. 1982, I was 13.
Okay. Well, we should never ask a lady her age.
Well, exactly. So.
No, but I really did have I had a full beard as well. I was shaving in 1980. My back. And
Nathan, how old were you in 1981?
One.
Oh my God. What year was it when you first saw Halloween 2? It was probably the 90s then, was it?
No. I was watching horror movies since I've been probably 4 or 5 years old.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I used to watch Halloween TV and everything. I mean, I used to watch those when I was probably about 5 or 6. I remember talking about scary movies when I was in kindergarten. I was enacting out Slumber Party Massacre.
So when did you see your first horror movie, Justin? Because I guess I was about 13, 14 when I started getting into horror, so I was probably a late adopter.
I was probably about 13 or 14 when I saw Friday the 13th and Halloween 2 for the first time. But I'd been watching kind of like Race of the Devil and all the kind of the Hammer horror and things like that around probably from the age of 9 or 10.
I do remember watching Jaws 2 with my brother and it got a bit too intense for me, so I had to go to bed. And my brother told me what happened in the end the next day. So, but apart from that, my first exposure to horror probably was that screening of Halloween 2.
Okay.
See, mine was The Hills Have Eyes, and I think it was 84 maybe or 83. I just know it was on HBO.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes?
Yeah.
Why are you saying hello?
Are you Lionel Richie?
Is it me you're looking for?
Yeah. I'm gonna sculpt a thingy of Nathan out of clay now.
Is Nathan taking...
Why?
Like in the video for Hello.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The blind girl sculpts.
I can see it in your eyes.
The blind girl sculpts a bust of
Lionel Richie. Richie. Yeah.
Then
why
Lionel
did he say hello? I'm lost.
Did someone?
I thought I heard. It must have been before I was born.
Hey, I'm getting confused now because I thought
this is turning into a Salvador Dali podcast.
I know. I thought I heard a phone ringing.
Sorry,
did you?
Hmm?
Eric.
What?
Did you hear a phone ringing?
No.
Oh. Oh, it must be from downstairs.
All I heard was
then.
I was talking, then I heard Nathan go, hello.
Yeah, and I said, is that Lionel Richie?
Oh, well, I think this is getting really confusing, isn't it? Because I think the phone rang downstairs, and then I heard Nathan say hello. So I thought the phone was ringing on his end.
No, I said hello because all the sound just dropped, like I couldn't hear any of you.
Wow. Oh.
Gosh. Mm. This is... Well, I think maybe we should move on to
dancing
feedback.
On the ceiling.
Wow. Well, we haven't got any cat shit this episode, but we had we certainly have had a surreal interlude regardless. Yeah. So, to wrap up on Halloween 2.
Caribbean
Eric,
Queen. That's Billy Ocean.
You're and Eric,
the same dream.
You know, you keep on saying you don't remember saying you're going to do things, but you do remember you're going to sing Mr. Sandman.
I do actually remember saying that. Yeah.
Yes,
I do actually. That was one of the things I meant to mention about Halloween 2. I love the inclusion of the Mr. Sandman song at the start and the end credits.
Fits really well.
It does, and it reminds, you know, in Insidious, they do the same kind of thing with Tiptoe Through the Tulips by, yeah. Who sings that again?
Tiny Tim,
yeah. I think they take sort of a classic sort of 30s, 40s song and make it very sinister by including it in a sort of horror context.
Yeah, I don't think it works as well in Insidious as it does in Halloween 2.
No, but I do think it works really well in Insidious, though, I have to say.
Yeah,
because his voice is so high-pitched, yeah, that it's weird, yeah.
We'll have to cover his slasher movie, won't we? Tiny Tim's slasher
Blood
movie.
Harvest.
Yes.
Ooh. Is it harvest of blood? I've never seen it.
I've never seen it either.
It's just blood harvest. It's, I think it might have been very good, but
I can't really remember.
Okay, a bonus point if you can name who sang Mr. Sandman on the soundtrack to Halloween 2.
Oh, Aretha Franklin.
No, not Aretha Franklin. What did you say, Nathan?
The Shirelles.
No, it's the Cordettes.
Cordettes. Oh. Well, we'll play out closer. With that, with Eric
singing
along.
What about the Cordette?
No.
Right, I'm going to call a point to order. We are going to, let's move on to feedback, because I think we're in danger of becoming ever more sort of, what's the word for it?
What was the one episode we did where it was just insane? I mean, all of them are like that. But
Bloody Moon.
Bloody Moon.
It's becoming like Bloody Moon again, all over again.
Oh, honestly, how far-fetched. That's a bit gruesome or something.
Well, here's the contact details of how to contact the show and tell us how professional we are. So
you can contact us via email at the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com. Our voicemail line is 858-233-9281. We are on Twitter. That's twitter.com/THC_podcast. And finally, look us up on Facebook by searching for The Hysteria Continues. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
And I recorded that this morning, and I was really sleepy, so I sound like
like you have a cold.
Yeah, I was like, contact us via email at The Hysteria Continues. But that's the contact details.
You were just waking up after a visit from Mr. Sandman.
Yeah, Mr. Sandman did not bring me a dream.
Yes.
No.
Well, feedback. Feedback.
Feedback.
Feedback. What feedback do we have? I have one.
Oh, well, then you go first.
I've got a big one. What, a bit of feedback?
I've gotten
a bit of feedback I meant. What did you think I meant?
Eric,
hey, did you hear that? Nathan has nothing.
Well, this one ends with talk about your backside, Eric. So, here we go.
Please, by all means, let's hear this one first.
Yeah.
Right. Hi, Justin. A big hello to you and your fabulous co-hosts, Eric, Joseph, and Nathan. I'm just done listening to the latest episode covering Fatal Frames. I just wanted to add a little bit of info that might explain the sublime Stefania Stella's anointing as Napoleonic Madonna. I think that the word that might have been originally used is Neapolitan, which means from Naples, Italy, and it somehow got confused afterwards. So I should believe it should be the Neapolitan Madonna. Curiously enough, when you search the word Neapolitan on Wikipedia, the first thing that comes up is not to be confused with Napoleon. On the other hand, if it does turn out that it's indeed the Napoleonic Madonna, I guess it would make some kind of poetic sense, as she must have an ego worthy of Napoleon, considering her scenery-chewing and charismatic, in inverted commas, performance on Festa's film. One other tidbit, not related to Fatal Frames. Have you guys noticed that in 1982's The Slayer, every time a character is killed, there is a scene soon after where you can hear a clock chiming in the background at the number of people that are still left? So obviously the chimes decrease as the film rolls along. Creepy. Please keep it up, guys. The podcast, I mean. There ain't no other as good as yours. And if I'm mistaken about anything, I just wrote, I'll eat Eric's ass. And that...
Ooh.
yes. And that was from... don't say I didn't put down who it's from. It was from Xavier in New York City. So thank you, Xavier. Yes, Eric, your ass... Another outing.
yeah, another outing. God, I'll have to. You know,
You have two outings in that.
I have to say bookings these days. It's so popular.
Mm. But isn't that interesting about The Slayer? Because I've never noticed.
No, that's an interesting little tidbit.
Ooh, little tidbit. Yes.
Well, that's more observant than my observations about the illegal parking.
Indeed, yeah. And more interesting as well.
Hey, Was not, there was nothing wrong with my observation about the illegal parking in Halloween 1 and 2.
Quick, say something about Susie. We haven't done that this episode.
Susie has stupid hair and she smells.
Oh, Eric, how old are you?
38.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you, Xavier. Is there anyone else got any feedback?
I do.
Oh, go on.
Okay. Go ahead, Eric.
This is from Brett Roberts, and he says, okay, I'm going to do this in my best Linda Day George voice. Hello again, you lousy bastards! Bastards! Bastards!
Oh, Eric.
I'm sorry. That's Oscar worthy. Sorry?
Oscar worthy.
Thank you.
Yes. Hmm. Give that man an award.
Yep. Or a chunky Kit Kat.
Ooh, that'd be better than an award for me. I'm sorry I didn't write any feedback for the last few shows. I hope you guys didn't cry too hard or slit your wrists too much. Some suggestions and feedback. One, I think a good top three would be horror movies that you actually want to see remade. Once in a Blue Moon, a remake is better than the original. And then he gives some examples. Invasion of the Body Snatchers, 1978, and The Fly, 1986, spring to mind. What are some horror movies that you think could be better and deserve a good remake? Secondly, please review Maniac. Joe Spinell is brilliant, and I've always loved this movie. And three, would you guys be interested in a paid intern to do any sort of writing, editing work for you? I have just graduated college with a Bachelor of Science in Professional Writing and need employment beyond my nightly street walking. My day job, obviously, at the hardware store. And finally, what is your favourite James Cameron movie? And this is for all. That's all I have for now. I've not forgotten of you, gentlemen, and I might even send in a voicemail at some point. Love from Brett Roberts. Okay, well, Brett, first of all, the paid intern thing.
None of us get paid.
In fact, Joseph is actually looking for money to keep the server alive or the hosting server going. So if anyone wants to contribute to that, please do.
Actually, both Justin and I ask for donations for our website. So yes. That's how much we don't get paid for it.
That's how much we don't get. We get unpaid, in fact.
I think I've had a donation for my my website for about 4 years. So I'm not
Have you tried? But not enough to pay for an intern. I'm sorry to say. Yeah.
Have you tried putting a picture of yourself, Justin, in a low-cut top on the website?
No, but for every dollar that I get, I could inch it down a little bit, couldn't I?
You could,
inch up my trouser leg a little bit more.
That would be it. That would get it, exactly, yeah.
The people who pay
I could pay an intern to work for me, but he'd make like a bag of peanuts. That's all he'd get.
You have to pay in sweat, as Debbie Allen once said. Yes. Okay, a top three horror movies that we actually want to see remade.
Mm. And he does make Zombies Halloween.
Well, we did. I think we did slasher movies we wanted remade rather than horror films in general. And he makes some valid points.
Show?
I think we will, yeah. But I do agree that the Invasion of the Body Snatchers remake from 78 is brilliant, and so is the Fly remake from 86.
The Fly is much better than the original Fly. I think the Blob is much better than the original.
Oh, the Blob is brilliant, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maniac, Joe Spinell's Maniac. Now, Justin, you were saying you found that hard to watch earlier. I think it's quite a good film. I'm not hugely fond of it, but I think it's quite good.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen it for a long time because I did back in the debacle with Horror Movie Empire when I bought the Blu-ray and I never got it. But having said that, I now have I've got Terror Train just through. I haven't watched it yet, the Blu-ray of it. And obviously I've got that Blu-ray player which plays American Blu-rays. So I may go on a little buying spree. The only trouble with Maniac is it's one of those kind of films that might get seized at customs, perhaps.
Have you ever had a DVD seized at customs? I've had to pay custom charges and occasional packages, but I've never had anything seized.
I've not had anything seized, but I think there are still a list of films which you're not supposed to import, I think. So
my flatmate actually had a Woody Allen box set seized at customs.
Really?
Because it was an illegal one from China.
Oh, right.
They were kind of bootleg
looking
versions.
For that more, aren't they? Mm. Mm.
Yeah, she's into more highbrow films than I am.
Well, evidently, yes.
Yes. Maniac,
you
guys.
Think that's what happened to you, Justin? I remember someone sent to me the Friday the 13th, I guess it's Blu-rays, and then I sent them to you, and you said you never got them. You think customs might have got them?
The Blu-rays? Did you send me Blu-rays?
Yeah, a long time ago, someone was sending you Blu-rays, and they couldn't send it to the United Kingdom. They needed to send it to someone in the States. So they sent it to me, and then I sent it to you, but you never got it.
Oh, yeah.
It was the first three.
It could have been, or it just got lost. It sometimes happens, because I've had a couple of things go missing in the post recently.
Including my Halloween 3 Blu-ray, which I eventually had to reorder from eBay, and it arrived one day later.
Oh, really? You didn't get it?
I never got it from the States, from DVD Planet, but they very kindly reimbursed me and said, really sorry about that. And everything else I've ordered from them has arrived fairly promptly. So I ordered it off eBay and it arrived the next day. The next working day, I should say. I ordered it on a Friday and it arrived on the Monday.
Okay. Well, I mean, are we going to... Maybe we can have a look at... we're looking for some top threes. So maybe your top three horror movies we'd like to see remade might be quite an interesting thing. So,
and Maniac, I'm sure, is one that will be on our future list of things to review. Favourite James Cameron movie? For me, if you'd asked me this question 15 years ago, I would have said Aliens, but now I would say The Abyss, probably. The Abyss Special Edition, for me, would probably be my favourite James Cameron movie.
Okay.
Piranha 2 is a lot of fun, I have to say.
Yes.
I'll go with The Terminator. The first Terminator is my favourite. Mm.
I think for me as well, probably it's Terminator. But,
I mean, he made some great films, but I think he's lost the plot recently. I didn't really care for Titanic or Avatar.
Well, he's not making movies now. He's making important things.
Yeah.
He's got an ego now, so there you go.
Yeah.
I enjoyed Titanic and The Abyss. I think they're very entertaining films, but they're not... Avatar, yeah.
My cinema experience with Avatar was the fact that myself... I went with my flatmate again, and we were both pelted with Maltesers throughout the film.
Were you?
Yep.
Was that Nigel?
Why?
No, actually, I should say hello to Nigel, because I met him on Friday night because he works at the Horrorthon, and he introduced me to Danielle Harris. So hello, Nigel.
Hello, Nigel.
We'll see. I'll probably see you again tonight at some stage, although you probably won't be listening to this till after the Horrorthon. But...
So who was pelting you with Maltesers? Did you have your mouth open?
Kids. They were coming from behind. Ooh, or misses.
Would you put your hands behind your back and open your mouth like a seal if they were throwing like Mars bars or chunky Kit Kats at you?
Do you get Maltesers?
Normally I would like to have Maltesers thrown at me, but in this instance I didn't. And I turned to my flatmate at one stage and went, did you just get hit by a Malteser? And she went, yeah, that's about the second or third one. And I went, I'm going to kill somebody. And she said, look, because she knows that I have a real low tolerance for chavs. Yeah. She said, look, just stay calm, deep breathing. So I hated Avatar, and probably that is one of the main reasons why.
Okay, well, there you go. So, thank you, Brett, for writing
so in. Yeah, so Brett, or anyone out there listening, if you're going to throw Maltesers at me, just give me the bag and let me eat them. It's probably the best thing.
Fair enough. So do we have any more feedback?
Yeah, I got one here from Jeffrey Canino. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that right. He says, hello, sweet hysterians. I'm writing in this evening to express my continuing appreciation of your podcasting efforts. For the entirety of October, I've been making my way through 31 slasher films that I've yet to have seen previously in an event I've taken to calling Slashtober. I've been watching and then fashioning a write-up for each every day this month on my trusty horror blog, pronounced roughly Nasun Timora. I guess that's how I'm pronouncing it. If you feel like plugging me, I'm not going to spell that out. Sorry. I thought you had to look that up. To say the least, it's been a quite singular experience in my movie-watching history, but the highlights have undoubtedly been each occasion that I've been able to revisit one of your episodes this month, armed with my own new-formed impressions of the films covered. Your recent episode on Movie House Massacre, with special regard to Nathan's interview with that likable rogue Rick Sloan, was a particular pleasure. This experience has also left me anticipating future episodes of your fine program. I'd love to hear one on Aerobicide, and can't even imagine what you'd all have to say about Blood Beat. Oh, dear Lord, Blood Beat. Lastly, yes, I would agree with him there.
Gossip typing.
I think Justin had mentioned Bloodbeat at one point.
On our very first episode,
about possibly, Lastly, in anticipation of your Halloween 2 episode, inquiring minds want to know, what are your Halloween viewing traditions? Are there any particular gruesome favorites that always find their way into your seasonal viewing schedule? For me, I guess it would be... I don't really watch Halloween that much anymore because I'm kind of burnt out on it, to be honest. But I do try to watch Black Christmas around Christmas and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. We used to watch that in the summer. And I guess that's about it for me. What about you guys?
I know we
did watch Halloween once in near Halloween last year when we had movie nights. But this year I haven't really done any kind of seasonal watching. I've been kind of busy.
Well,
but what about you guys?
Yeah, over here in Ireland, Halloween is not... Is it a public holiday in the States? Like, do you get the day off work for Halloween?
No.
I wish. Sometimes, yeah. I guess sometimes... I had a job once that sometimes if it was kind of like slow, they'd send everyone home like at around noon.
Yeah.
But
Halloween has nothing like the cachet it does in the States over here. I mean, for me, Halloween viewing would be no different from any other day of the week, to be honest. So I can't say I have any special.
That's pretty much how Halloween is here, except for at night. At night's when all the wackos go out and just have fun.
No, I have no Halloween traditions. Although I do remember, like, apart from my watching Halloween 2 and Halloween Night back in 1985 on the television, I do remember a couple of years later, Irish National Television, RTE, broadcast a lot of 3D movies. They distributed a lot to 3D glasses with, you know, the television guides, and you could get them in the shops and stuff. And they showed a couple of 3D movies, like House of Wax, I think, and they showed... something with Vincent Price about a magician. I can't remember the name of it. And they showed a Western called Inferno. Nothing to do with the Dario Argento movie. So I remember that being a particularly good Halloween, even though the 3D wasn't that spectacular. But it was kind of a gimmick at the time. But there's nothing I do every year, really, to be honest. Although this year on Halloween Eve, which is Tuesday the 30th, I will be going to see the original Halloween on the big screen, even though I've watched it twice this week. So I don't know how I'm going to enjoy it, but it'll be my first opportunity to see it in a theatre. So
it's a real shame because it's only playing in Bristol on Wednesday night, on Halloween night, and that's the night in London, which is a real pain.
Mm. Well, what's been a real pain over here, And this is what they call a first world problem, is that there are two competing cinemas are showing tons of brilliant horror films at the same time. Like when I was watching Slice and Dice on Friday night, in the other screen at the horrorthon was, as I said, Zombie Flesh Eaters and Deep Red on a double bill. Whilst, 10 minutes away at another cinema was Suspiria, which I would love to see on a big screen. Mm. And last night they showed Child's Play and Nightmare on Elm Street on an 80s double bill. Tonight they're showing The Mist in black and white.
Okay.
Tomorrow night it's Poltergeist, but that clashes. I'm going to see Nightbreed, the new director's cut of Nightbreed, I'm going to see instead. And then on Tuesday night they're showing Halloween, so I'm going to go see that. So
I think Patrick from Scream Queens, he said that he went to see Nightbreed, didn't he, the director's cut?
And he said, what do you think? Yeah.
Well, I think he quite enjoyed it, but he said a lot of it, the inserts and stuff, is like really kind of subpar VHS quality.
That's, because Nigel, I was talking to Nigel, he saw it at Fright Fest in London back in August. And he said, I asked him, like, were the inserts as noticeable as on the My Bloody Valentine unrated version?
Mm.
And he said they're slightly below that quality, but they're still not as jarring as he was expecting.
Okay.
But it'll be interesting to see, because I haven't seen Nightbreed since 1990, so I have absolutely no recollection. I mean, I read the novella, which I remember really enjoying, and I saw the film when it came out, and I remember thinking it was a bit iffy.
I remember the Nightbreed versus Rawhead Rex comic book. I think it was that. That's
really?
That's about the extent of my memory of Nightbreed, is that comic book.
You guys are about to lose me. I've got 2% left on my phone battery.
Mine's rather low. I think mine
will last a little bit longer. So let me finish this up real quick then. I'm going to go ahead and give everyone the address to his blog so I'll feel better. It's NESSUNTI. imore.blogspot.com. But lastly, he says, perhaps bizarrely, during Halloween, I don't let one viewing slip by without – I don't go without viewing Ernest Scared Stupid, which probably says far too much about me. At any rate, mm-hmm. I realize that your special Halloween episode may have already been recorded and released by the time this question is read. No, it hasn't. But we're all weirdos who celebrate Halloween year-round in our town in our own small ways. So your answers will still be appreciated. Thanks again for your hours upon hours of mayhem, matrons, and feline flushing. And I just realized we didn't have a cat flushing a toilet this episode.
Yeah. And actually, we didn't ask Justin and Nathan what they do for Halloween night. Although I know Justin's going to the theater this year.
Yeah, Nathan.
And Nathan's going to get a new phone charger for Halloween. Yeah.
I don't have a tradition on Halloween night. I try to watch Halloween sometime the month of October every year, though. Mm.
Yeah.
Well, same here. I try and do that. And when I say I'm going to the theatre on Halloween night, it sounds very highbrow, but I'm actually going to see Dina Martina, who's a very twisted drag queen, doing a Halloween show in London in Soho. So it's still
That should be fun. Whereabouts? What's the venue?
I'm not sure. It's a theatre in Soho in London. But I did see her when I was in America, and she is really, really funny. She's very twisted, but not in a horrible way, but just in a kind of really surreal kind of way.
Oh, is she kind of the chunky one with the ill-applied makeup?
Yes, and a hairy back.
Yes, okay. Yes. Yeah.
So
I've seen the pictures, yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, she's hilarious, but... and also talking horror, well, I said we went to that Mexican thing last night, but it was so cold that we went to a bar down on the waterfront in Bristol, and it is a horror watching people walking past, because it's been like that since I was a teenager. There's always, used to call them kebs and shazzes, which are people going out, the men going out in t-shirts and the women going out in miniskirts, regardless of the weather. It could be minus 40, but they still always go out in very skimpy clothes. I think
there goes Nathan.
Oh well. So
yes, we've lost Nathan. Battery has run out.
Yes, we've been talking for so long. But just quickly to wrap that up. We were sat there, and we were in this bar watching, and there was all these hen parties going past, and it seems to be endless hen parties whenever I'm down there. And the ones we saw, the ones that really took my breath away, as I think it was these very large ladies dressed as French maids, but they all had huge inflatable strap-on penises on as well. So that's a Bristol night out for you. But I think
To Bristol.
So you want to move to Bristol?
Yeah, I'm sold on that.
Well, I did get a photo of it. I'll send it to you if it'll come out. But we should say, as now Nathan's gone, I think he won't get a chance to hear you singing along to the music we're going to play out with. Are you going to sing along to this?
I will, because I promised I would.
Okay.
And of course, the audience demands it. It's like X Factor.
Exactly. Well, here we go. I'm going to play it all. And this is Mr. Sandman from the end of Halloween 2.
And feel free to join in, Justin and Joseph, if you like.
Yes.
Okay. I'll try. I'll harmonize.
Okay. And here we singing us out with Mr. Sandman is Eric Lee Curtis.
I said bum.
You did. I said bum.
Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream.
There, that's
the cutest that I've ever seen. Make him of something like roses and clover. I'll tell him that his love's all over. Sandman, I'm so alone. Don't have nobody to call my own. Please turn on your magic. Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream.
Bring me a Kit Kat.
A chunky one, preferably.
Yes, preferably chunky.
Bring me a bum bum.
Eric, this is the campest thing I've ever heard.
Bring me a dream. Make him the cutest that I've ever seen. Give him the
word that I'm not a rover. Come on, Eric, sing up. You've only got a minute and 20 seconds. So.
There's a lot of bumps in this song.
There's a lot of bumps.
Eric Mr. likes that.
Yes. Bring us a dream. Give him a big belly.
The hairy chest as well.
Give him a lonely heart like Pagliacci. And lots of wavy hair like Liberace. Mr. Sandman, someone to hold. Someone to hold. Would be so peachy.
And a new pair of socks for me. Thank you.
Oh, and a new Blu-ray player for me.
Yeah. Daddy needs a new pair of socks and a new pair of shoes.
Starting game. No, stop it. Bum, okay. Bum. Bum, bum.
Poor Nathan. He didn't get to hear the brilliance.
Okay, well, there's a thing I do to really freak out my flatmate, who thinks I'm incredibly repulsive, where I pull up my underpants right up the crack of my arse and wander around as if I'm J-Lo, and it's called the horror thong.
The horror thong, there we go.
Yeah.